My kids came by surprise.
Oh, did they really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Including Seth.
Oh, yes.
Got it.
Fantastic. I see him.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. All right, we ready to go?
Ready.
We ready to go? Beth in here? Good morning, and welcome to the December 13th meeting of the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University. I'm going to call this meeting to order and ask if there's a motion to approve the agenda. Support. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Is there a motion to approve the October 25th, 2024 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Support.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. Okay, I'd like to begin this morning by remembering Dr. Clifton Wharton, a true Spartan and pathbreaker who passed away last month. Dr. Wharton served as MSU's 14th president. President Wharton recorded many firsts, including in his work as an agricultural development economist, an executive in higher education, philanthropy, and corporate worlds. He was the first black president of a major U.S. public research university, and from 1970 to 1978, he led Michigan State through an often tumultuous period of social change while pursuing his goal of building a pluralistic university. I'll always remember the warmth of which he welcomed me into the Spartan family, and the leadership wisdom that he offered. I first had a chance to meet Dr. Wharton and his wife Dolores in New York City at their home back in May of this past year, and he encouraged me to be bold in the way that I would lead Michigan State University. And I continued to have conversations with Dr. Wharton even leading up to my investiture back in late September. And I know that we'll continue to make Dr. Wharton proud. So I'd like to pause for a moment of silence to remember and reflect on the legacy of President Clifton Wharton. Thank you. So this week, our students are completing their course projects and taking their final exams before the winter break, and I wish them good luck and good grades. I enjoyed leading fall graduates on Wednesday, climbing the 73 steps of Beaumont Tower, a tradition that I started last spring with the spring graduating class of 2024. More than 100 graduates climbed the tower and heard about the history of the clock tower, which is nearly 100 years old now. Students learned about the significance of the belt of Beaumont Tower as a meeting place, and also, as we found it interesting, a keeper of time, as the individuals giving the tour talked about the difference as you think about 100 years ago, and students didn't have the benefit of a cell phone to track their time and getting to and from classes. So in many ways, the tower clock served in many ways of notifying students when it was time to move on to their next class. So we thought that was interesting. Exam week can also be stressful, and I want to thank our faculty, academic and support staff for taking such good care of our students, from reaching out with academic support to serving meals in our dining halls. And thanks also to our partners bringing therapy dogs to campus to help ease the nights of hard study. Speaking of canines, we love our presidential pup, Coda, who sends a shout out to two very good Spartan dogs celebrating their recent birthdays, Zeke the Wonder Dog, and River, our Department of Police and Public Safety comfort dog. And I hope you'll keep River in your thoughts. He's recovering from surgery that he had to have earlier this week. I'm looking forward now to congratulating and celebrating nearly 4,000 new Spartan graduates at our fall commencement ceremonies later today and tomorrow. And I know many of you will be there to join in that celebration. In the next couple of months, I look forward to welcoming 1,000 prospective Spartans to tour campus who will compete for the merit-based scholarships here at Michigan State. And it'll be the inaugural year for our new Joseph R. and Sarah L. Williams Scholarship Program, our premier undergraduate scholarship program that I was pleased to introduce at my presidential investiture back in September. With 30 new scholarships available to the best and brightest incoming students, the Williams Scholarships will more than double our full ride awards. In addition to covering tuition, housing, and meals, these scholarships will include stipends for education abroad and other experiential education opportunities, which add such valuable dimensions to the college experience here in our classrooms. It's great knowing that together we've prepared our graduates to secure good jobs on the way to great careers. A recent survey just announced last week in the Times Higher Education places Michigan State among the top 10 public U.S. universities for graduate employability, something we should be proud of. So we know that there's a great ROI on a Michigan State degree, which is why we're also working with our community college partners to widen the pipeline for students seeking to transfer to Michigan State to earn four-year and perhaps advanced degrees. A number of us joined our colleagues at Lansing Community College this month to recommit to an expanded Envision Green program. This is another initiative announced at my presidential investiture with state grant support. We'll direct new resources and support students to LCC transfers and build our infrastructure to support similar arrangements with other community colleges. And for students pursuing a career in medicine, our College of Human Medicine has signed an early admissions agreement with Oakland Community College to establish a cooperative program of pre-medical and medical education. The articulation agreement offers Oakland Community College students an enhanced opportunity for admission to medical school after transferring to MSU as pre-medical students interested in working with underserved populations. These are great examples, once again, of how MSU is and will continue to be Michigan State University. Along those lines, and with the inaugural Spartan bus tour in the books, I'm already getting excited for next year's bus tours. And I say tours because we're going to have two of them. This is when we took faculty and leaders to points around the state. And for 2025, we're looking at expanding the Spartan bus tour. The first will be a briefer visit to the Metro Detroit area in May, just following graduation. The second one, next fall, will look more like the tour that we took this past October with 3 days of visits across a wider section of the state. And we're looking at this point at a tour in the Upper Peninsula and Northern Lower Peninsula. The point of the different tour formats is to increase participation overall while making them more accessible and inclusive through different timing and structures. And we'll keep the campus community informed as plans are firmed up and when we open applications for participation early in the new semester. And as I've said before, all of us as Spartans should be amplifying our stories about Michigan State's world-class research and engaged community outreach. And that's exactly what we'll do as we touch down in communities that our students, faculty, staff, legislators call home to show once again how we are Michigan's state university. So I was excited to see researcher Eric Olson's work enjoying notice in major news media outlets as he works to revive rye seeds recovered from a 19th century Lake Huron shipwreck. Through the great work of our university communications and marketing crew, the story has picked up so far by media including the New York Times, the Times of London, Science Friday, and public radio Smithsonian Magazine, the MSN Network, and even Popular Mechanics. It's a fine example of how Spartans are engaging the interest of people across the globe in our work. Here's another item worthy of amplification. We learned recently that Michigan State leaped ahead in the 2025 QS sustainability rankings to number 28 in the world and number 5 in the nation. Both rankings place MSU in the top 2%. The QS sustainability rankings measure how well universities are addressing the world's greatest environmental, social, and governance issues. So congratulations to our Office of Sustainability and all those who are integrating sustainability into our operations and academic programs. I join the board today in saluting the fall graduates who earned perfect GPAs and will shortly be recognized with the Board of Trustees Award. It's an inspiring accomplishment, and I look forward to seeing them at tomorrow's commencement ceremonies. We can congratulate our Michigan State student athletes as well, who excelled in the most recent NCAA graduation rate report. MSU's four-year federal graduation rate of 80% is tied for second highest in athletic department history and ranks fourth among the Power Four public institutions. It's the fourth straight year that MSU has been at 80% or better in three programs. Women's soccer, volleyball, and men's tennis had perfect 100% four-year graduation rates. I also want to shout out former football head coach Mark D'Antonio on his induction into the College Football Hall of Fame on Tuesday. And speaking of sports, we have four winter sports teams in the top 25, ice hockey, gymnastics, and women's and men's basketball. The individual sports rankings have changed a bit from what you see here, but it's an extraordinary accomplishment to have so many teams in the top 25. Women's basketball got off to their best start in program history, in fact, with a 9-0 record after the win over DePaul on Sunday, and they'll host number 21, Iowa, this Sunday. And tonight, MSU's ice hockey team faces off against Minnesota in a contest between the top two teams in the country in terms of winning percentage. So good luck to all of our teams, and I hope you can get out and support these incredible student-athletes at every opportunity. Finally, I want to close by expressing my gratitude to our two departing trustees for their dedication to MSU, its students and its employees, and to the people of Michigan that we serve. We will hear from their colleagues later in the meeting, but I personally want to thank trustees Diane Byram and Dan Kelly for the support that they've given me, starting with approval of my appointment a year ago. Dan and Diane, you've been thoughtful and valued partners over these first 9.5 months, and helping me to get off to a good start in setting a new course for Michigan State University. And for that, I am grateful, and I know that I speak for so many here on our leadership team and the many faculty and students with whom you've taken the time to get to know over 16 years, Diane, over 8 years, Dan, and we are grateful for all of the work that you've conducted alongside them to move Michigan State University forward and ensuring that we will attain our goal of being a leading global public research university. Thank you. With that, I'm going to continue on with the agenda and turn it over to Secretary Fletcher.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. We'll now proceed to the public participation on items germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. You will hear the buzzer at the 30-second mark, and again when your time has concluded. So it's a little bit of a pre-warning just before beforehand now. So given the number of speakers today, we ask that you not exceed your allotted time, and note that persons scheduled to speak may not cede all or part of their time to other individuals or read statements on behalf of others. We will now hear from Jennifer Gett, followed by Alex Olweiss. Jennifer? Good morning.
Good morning. A collective of MSU faculty have worked together to produce a report entitled The Cost of Complicity, A Call for Ethical Investment at Michigan State University. Three of us will address the board this morning. Our group has shared advanced copies with local journalists and will make the report publicly available in January. Each of you will receive a copy. We ask you to read it carefully. In it, we detail MSU's complicity in a world historic genocide. The perpetrators of this atrocity and those who are complicit will face reckoning in the years to come for unfathomable crimes against the Palestinian people. We are here to inform you, so at the time of reckoning, you cannot say you did not know. The evidence is overwhelming. International condemnation is widespread, and there is powerful consensus among international institutions like the International Court of Justice, Amnesty International, and the United Nations that the State of Israel is committing crimes of apartheid and genocide against the Palestinian people. Even the International Criminal Court, which many thought would never confront Israeli leaders for their crimes, issued arrest warrants for Prime Minister Netanyahu and former Minister of Defense Gallant in November. International human rights advocates are increasingly focusing on third-party complicity. Amnesty International has called on all states to suspend weapons transfers to Israel due to the likelihood that they will be used to commit crimes under international law. UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese is investigating the involvement of banks, pension funds, universities, as well as private security companies and weapons manufacturers in the commission of international crimes connected to Israel's unlawful occupation and apartheid regime in Palestinian territory. Albanese's findings are germane to MSU as a public institution with a large endowment directly and indirectly invested in entities that profit from violations of international law and crimes against humanity to the tune of $770 million, or just over 15% of MSU's cash and investments. Our report calls on the board to divest from genocide and war profiteering and develop a socially conscious investment strategy that reflects MSU's stated commitment to serve the common good and improve the world we live in. If not out of moral and ethical considerations, divest to avoid the reputational damage that MSU's investments will inevitably bring to our university. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Our next speaker is Alex Allweis, followed by Stephen Gasteyer. Good morning.
Good morning. Our report focuses on direct and indirect investments in corporations and governments implicated in gross human rights abuses in MSU's 2023 cash and investments disclosure. In particular, we looked at the sovereign bonds and debt securities issued by the governments of Israel and Saudi Arabia, who have been responsible for well-documented human rights abuses and genocide, as well as indirect investments via two funds that hold Israeli corporate holdings that support and profit from Israel's illegal settlements and occupation, as well as the state's genocide in Gaza. In addition to this, we look at direct and indirect investments in corporations complicit in these crimes, such as weapons manufacturers, heavy machinery companies, IT, software, AI, and surveillance companies, oil and gas companies, and water companies. And we document the crimes in which each of these are complicit. All of the companies we outline in our report have documented horrific human rights records. The UN Human Rights Office and High Commissioner, as well as many other human rights organizations, have listed these companies among those that are complicit in serious violations of international human rights and international humanitarian laws, which include supporting, facilitating, and profiting from Israel's illegal settlements and providing technology, weapons, machinery, and resources that have facilitated the indiscriminate bombing of homes, hospitals, schools, and refugee camps in massacre after massacre, as well as the direct targeting of civilian, Lebanese, and now Syrian civilians, including children, journalists, and aid workers in Gaza. These companies have facilitated the forced displacement of Palestinians, the destruction of Palestinian homes, schools, and agriculture, and have supplied military hardware, software, bombs, and weapons used in indiscriminate maiming, killing, starvation, and the genocide and ethnic cleansing of thousands of Palestinians, war crimes in Lebanon, and now the invasion of Syria. We keep hearing that MSU's investments are not neutral and not political, but our findings show anything but neutrality in these investments. Our report shows how MSU has chosen, through its investments, to support and profit off violence, war, and genocide rather than, as my colleague will soon show, life, community, and a collective future. And given discourses around Jewish safety and comfort that have been weaponized and used to evade such change and accountability, I stand here as a Jewish member of the MSU community to say to you again that facilitating and profiting off genocide does not make any of us safer and should make us all very uncomfortable. It is past time for MSU to divest.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Stephen Gasteyer, followed by Atiya Abdulwasi. Stephen? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address this this board. There's been much said about the negative effects of our investments in armaments and security, specifically in terms of the humanitarian and human rights crisis in the Middle East. These investments have had direct impacts on Spartans, such as the killing of Tariq Thabit, but also impacts on family and loved ones through in the region. And again, as the last speaker noted, this is not only in Gaza, but now in Lebanon and in Syria. My own connection to this is a longtime collaborator and dear friend, I'm talking about 4 decades, who contacted us just 2 days ago to say that the best thing that's happening in their life is they were able to get a dozen eggs. So somebody who was a scholar committed to sustainability and community development is now relegated to scrounging just to be able to survive. I wanted to make 2 important points this morning. First is that these investments also affect other goals in the strategic plan of MSU. In particular, Michigan State University has long stated its goal of being a leader in sustainability. And in fact, stated specifically a goal to achieve platinum status under the ASHI organization ranking of higher education sustainability. And notably, one of the things keeping us from achieving that goal is our current investment portfolio. It turns out that armaments industries have an abysmal sustainability score, as they damage the web of life from the extraction to long past deposition. The second point is there are alternatives. Institutions such as the American Friends Service Committee has convened a consortium of institutions that are developing investment portfolios that maintain good returns while diverting investments from these very harmful industries. Third, as our own Center for Community and Economic Development has noted in a published report, the diversion of such funds could go towards funding the most marginal communities in our state. We have the community development financial institutions have long played a role in investing money into those communities that are most in need. So in conclusion, divesting could have the effect of not only making us less complicit in this horrible events in the Middle East, but also achieving many of our goals as an institution. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Our next speaker is Atiya Abdulwasi, followed by David Hogan. Atiya, good morning.
Good morning. Board and President, my name is Atiya Abdulwasi. I'm one of the members of the Hudiya Coalition. I'm here today and have been for the last year to demand the divestment of the university endowment in Israel and weapons manufacturers. Today, as you go through your agenda, a decision must be made on proposed revisions to the university investment policy. However, you will also be making a further choice regarding your legacy. It seems there's a budding misconception that universities are centers of neutrality, a place where people can come together to only engage in civil discourse. But no, Institutions of higher learning are not places of apathy. They breed innovation and the creation of critical consciousness. They're hubs of action, movement, and history. It is also undeniable that your rhetoric around civil discourse is deeply seated in racist narratives that always arise around liberation movements. When the idea that there's a civil or correct way to protest a genocide is brought against a movement largely led by indigenous, black, and brown students, it reinforces tropes that we are uncivil, disruptive, and unreasonable. If being uncivilized is defined by our protests to end your involvement in genocide, then so be it. But we are not backing down. Make no mistake, it's not a matter of if divestment happens, it's when. Irrespective of whatever restraint, or neutrality is posed. 5, 10, 20 years down the line, you'll have to look back at this time and regret. You'll regret the stances you took, the death, displacement, and humanitarian crisis you actively enabled. You'll only be able to wish that you would have done better, but that won't change anything. It will not revive the innumerable dead families. It will not dry the tears of our communities. It will not reverse the homes and schools that have been bombed. You will not be absolved, and you will not be forgotten. As we, the constituency, are here before you today, you are complicit in genocide, and you'll live with the fact that there was a time that you chose the side of the oppressor, placing your responsibility as trustees and as a president above your duty as a human. Our demands are clear. This is about standing against violence, against apartheid, and against the dehumanization of entire communities, of our community. You have the power to take a stand today, to reject complicity, and embrace your moral responsibilities as people. For hundreds of thousands of people, you're too late. Do not let this moment continue to pass, and do not let your futures continue to fill with regret.
Thank you, Atiya. Our next speaker is David Hogan, followed by Zakai Mandwi. David? Good morning.
Morning. The revised Board of Trustees investment policy, BOT 607, is tragically bad. I won't lie and say I was expecting much better, but what I wasn't expecting was like a half-baked attempt at forcing us to accept yet another layer of bureaucracy disguised as a huge step forward. What I'm talking about here is specifically Section 3, Part C, consideration of investment changes, change requests for non-financial reasons. One of the first things I noticed while reading over the new policy, both this section and the policy statement, is the absence of the phrase social conscience. This phrase goes back to previous BOT policy when it was made clear that MSU would attempt to invest with a social conscience. And during our last meeting, we spent at least 30 minutes discussing and trying to decipher what could possibly be meant by social conscience. It consisted of a lot of us saying it seemed pretty clear in the face of a genocide, and then a lot of you saying, oh, we don't really know what's meant by it. It'll be reviewed during our policy review. So it really was a nice kick in the teeth when you all decided that it would simply be too difficult to define, and you gave up and removed it altogether. The second main aspect of 3C is the establishment of this new committee. I get the feeling that this is kind of meant to replace the whole social conscience aspect of the policy, where the board gets to ship off all moral and ethical dilemmas instead of confronting them head on. I mainly say this because of the extremely vague and undefined extraordinary conditions mentioned that the new committee will have to deal with. It certainly looks like an easy way of shutting down any campaigns for divestment, as, again, it hasn't been defined under any circumstances. Nevertheless, policy being made so that administration and the board don't have to speak with us directly seems not only extreme, but also wildly antithetical to the previously mentioned civil discourse and listening and learning lines that the administration has taken. The last thing I want to mention about this policy is the actual creation and makeup of the committee. At the end of the day, all the power still lies within the board and the administration. A handpicked committee serves no other purpose than making advocacy more difficult. The committee has essentially been established as an ad hoc committee, something famously known as the place where change goes to die. While the attempt to hand cases of divestment off to a group of students, staff, and faculty might seem like a logical thing to do, I would like to ask you what you think has been done over the past year. Have you not watched countless students, staff, and faculty stand at this podium and talk about what needs to be done and why? Because what I'm able to glean from this policy is that you simply will not hear us out. All this being said, it is pertinent to make known that whether this policy is adopted or not, we will continue to make ourselves heard. One of the ways we plan to do this involves you, the president, and the Board of Trustees. On Wednesday, February 5th, we will hold a town hall, the first open public discussion between the MSU community and administration about divestment. We are tired of bureaucratic barriers and closed-door meetings. We're tired of being told that things are in the works, and we're tired of being shut down at every turn. We demand that the administration makes its stances fully known to the public, and we demand that it happens with the ability for all to see. We will reach out with further details as we head into the new semester. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Our final speaker in this section of the meeting, Zakiya Madwi.
Zaki.
My apologies. Thank you. Yeah. Please proceed with your comments.
Earlier this semester, I met President Guskowitz at Sportspation and I asked you if you remembered me from ASMSU and the Board of Trustees meetings. You said that you did. Today, I hope you remember not just my presence at those meetings, but also the message that I shared. I told you this: the struggle of students to be heard and represented is not going away. It will not magically disappear. Palestinian liberation will not simply fade into silence or fade away from history. We will not be bullied, we will not be beaten down or broken, and we will not give up. We are fighting against oppression, against violence. We are fighting terrorism, illegal occupation, apartheid, and genocide, and we will continue to fight. Movements start with one. One person stands up, then a few more stand up, then a few thousand stand up, then millions stand up. Today, MSU, we demand for you to stand up. We ask you to stand with us. We ask you to stand on the correct side of history. And these are not requests. Let me be clear. These are demands. These are demands from your student body that you claim to represent. This university and this board have refused to speak. You have refused or been too cowardly to act. You have refused to even acknowledge what is happening in Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, and the rest of the Arab world, despite Michigan being a hub for Arabs in this country. You have refused to support your students. You have refused to say the name of Tariq Thabit, a former MSU scholar whose martyrdom has not been uttered once by this school. We are demanding action. We're demanding justice. We're demanding that you condemn the human rights abuses in Palestine. We are demanding that you divest from complicity. You are actively complicit in funding international war crimes. And don't just take my word for it. Look at the numerous ongoing criminal investigations and independent reports of almost every humanitarian and human rights organization on the planet. Divesting from these crimes would be a great start in healing the wounds that you have so deeply stoked in this university. The next step would be to go further, to stand on the side of justice. Condemn Zionism. Zionism is not just a radical right-wing ideology. Zionism is, by definition, colonialism and genocidal. Zionism is oppressive, violent, racist, and terroristic, characterized by an anti-Semitic history and a regressive past as well as present. There's an entire population, being dehumanized, ethnically cleansed, and erased. And you? Where do you stand? Where do you choose to stand? You choose to remain silent? You fund this genocide with millions of dollars? This university remains complicit. This board remains silent. So I'll ask this board one thing that I doubt you've ever been asked directly. I'll ask you a question that I really need an answer for. Are you a Zionist? And I'll ask again, do you believe in Zionism? And if so, do you truly understand the implications of your answer? Thank you. I hope you guys can answer that.
Thank you for your remarks, President Guskowitz. That concludes the section of public comment for this section of the meeting. Okay, thank you.
I'll now invite Vice President Gage to present this meeting's gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Kelly, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is August 8, 2024 through November 19, 2024. The total value for this period is $229,031,182.
Is there a motion to approve? Second? Okay. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? The gift and grant and contract reports approved. Vice President Gage.
So I'm going to introduce our speakers today. One of the great things about being at a leading global public research university is the excellence that we have across disciplines. And that can range from agriculture and plant science through engineering, through communication, social science. And today we're going to see excellence from the arts. And I'm pleased to introduce two very special researchers today. We are incredibly fortunate at MSU to have a distinguished College of Music and an exceptional jazz department. And today we are honored to have two of their leaders presenting. Rodney Whitaker is a globally renowned and highly acclaimed bassist, recording artist, and newly inducted member of the prestigious American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He is also a distinguished professor of jazz double bass at Michigan State University and serves as a director of jazz studies. He is recognized as one of the foremost performers and educators of jazz double bass in the United States. He's a lifelong member of the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra and serves as a conductor of the Jerry Allen Fellows Gathering Orchestra in Detroit, Michigan. Whether he is gracing the stage, leading master classes, recording in the studio, or engaging with the community to shape the future of jazz, Rodney is wholeheartedly and passionately dedicated to upholding the legacy of jazz through his Each One, Teach One philosophy. Our second presenter today, Carmen Bradford, is jazz royalty and a 2024 Grammy Award winner for Basie Swings the Blues, the Count Basie Orchestra. She's been nominated 5 times for a Grammy Award and is a recipient of the Los Angeles Jazz Society's Jazz Vocalist of the Year Award. With her body of work, which reflects her vast experience, versatility, and technical brilliance, she has carved out her place in jazz history, and she continues to contribute to the preservation of this uniquely American art form. After completing her academic and professional training at UT Austin's Butler School of Music, her career was launched after a serendipitous meeting with Count Basie, and she'll tell you about that today. It's kind of a remarkable story. At Professor Whitaker's invitation, she joined the MSU College of Music just a few months ago as an associate professor of vocal jazz. She's a firm believer in mentorship, and she now works with students to prepare them as the next leaders in jazz. You know, I think one of the things that's shared across disciplines is that focus on mentorship, whether it's in the sciences, in the arts, or any area. We're creating the leaders of the next generation, and I think you're going to see that exhibited here today. So please welcome Rodney Whitaker and Carmen Bradford.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, I should say. And I should tell you two things. The first thing is, as a kid, I wanted to do something with purpose. And that first thing, I wanted to be Thurgood Marshall when I was a kid at 7. And but I just discovered jazz at 13. And there's a picture of me at 12 years old playing violin. And I was excited about being a violinist until my first mentor, Mr. Hosea Taylor,
about the meaning.
Came to me and sold me on a vision. And that vision was simple. He said, I want you to play the double bass, because if you play the double bass, you can play jazz. And if you play jazz, this music will take you all over the world. You'll be able to travel throughout the world, and you'll be able to make some money. And I like the sound of that. So I'm going to start off here. There's an exciting film that's out called The Best of the Best, Jazz from Detroit. And I'm sort of the unofficial narrator of the film. It's about the meaning of music and jazz and the power of music and jazz. Because a lot of times with our formal education in school, we're focused mostly on notes. But we never really examine, like, the emotional aspects of music, the social aspects of music. One, two, bum. That's it. In Detroit, you are instilled with this idea that that is a part of your mission to mentor other folks from the time you first start playing. It is like the each one teach one philosophy is instilled in you by the time you're 15 years old. How I choose folks to be mentored is sometimes I see the potential that this person can be a leader. So I want to mentor folks that are going to mentor folks. All right, so this is a philosophy that is not inherent to Detroit. It's most black communities across the nation, and came about during the time of slavery. And the idea is that as soon as you learn information, you share it with someone, you share it with the community. And I realized early out as a young jazz musician who had been mentored by so many people, the community raised me to be what I am today. And it was important to realize that mentorship is the most important thing. You get to sell young folks on the vision. You get to help them figure out what they want to do with their life and their purpose. And so my idea is that I had this vision about 20 years ago that I would raise 1,000 mentors in my lifetime, a lifetime of work. And from that 1,000, they would raise their 1,000, and so on and so forth. And then we actually, through jazz, can change the world. Potential leaders, they're out there. We have to look for them. I develop a skill of being able to identify folks who want to do that. And that's really what I base our program on, finding whether it's faculty members, or potential students, graduate students, undergraduate students who care about the world, who care about leaving the world a better place. The results of that mentorship, now, I like to brag a little bit about our program, our jazz program, thanks to our Dean James Forger and his support and the university support. Almost every, I would say every competition that we've been in, from the Rudin to competitions on the West Coast, Monterey, Notre Dame Jazz Festival, Elmhurst College Festival, we always finish in the top three every time. And that's really because we have on stage with us 19 leaders who care deeply and passionate, and they're very competitive. They're Spartans. I'm going to yield the floor to my esteemed colleague, Carmen Bradford.
Well, no reason. I'm not surprised why I've been up since 2 a.m. this morning, because I'm just as terrified as I was at 2 a.m. when I woke up. Good morning. Hello. How exciting to be here. I'm going to speak very, very quickly as my time is very limited. I have an amazing background and amazing parents that always focused on creative visualization. It was like, close your eyes, Carmen, see who you want to be, see where you want to be. My dad and I was 10 years old. We were watching the Tonight Show that they always let me stay up for with Johnny Carson. He's the original, the real deal. Not that Jimmy and the gang aren't wonderful, but Johnny was the real deal. So I said, I turned to my dad because there was this incredibly famous singer on the show. And she had, every time she opened her mouth when she sang, she had a lot of teeth in her mouth. And I turned to my dad and I said, you're going to have to get me braces because I'm going to do the Tonight Show and with Mr. Carson, and I can't have my teeth messed up like that. And I'll never forget the expression on his face. He just said, okay. So you see my teeth, don't you? So I say all that to say, I continued that creative visualization when I met Count Basie in Austin, Texas, when I was a student at Houston-Tillotson College. It's Houston-Tillotson University now, small Methodist school there. And I wasn't supposed to be on the show. They said, there's no way we're letting that little girl open the show for Mr. Basie and his orchestra. And then I was on the show. And across from me was Mr. Basie on the other side of the stage. And he was riding on a motorized cart at that time. And I said, I'm going over. I'm going to say something to him. So I walked over and I said, hi, Mr. Basie. My name is Carmen Bradford, and I'm opening the show for you tonight. And I think you'll make $1 million if you hire me. And he said, really, $1 million? I said, oh, yeah, there's nothing like having a young lady on your show in a lovely dress. And he looked at me like he wanted to call the security. And so I said, well, will you listen to me? He said, of course I will. So I went out and I sang. I did my two numbers. And then I came off stage and I said, well, what did you think? He said, well, I'm going to hire you. I said, really? Well, I'm going to go to the dorm right now and get my stuff. I'm ready. He said, no, no, not tonight. But it took about 9 months for him to get back to me. And there were constant, my peers were constantly saying, that old man is not going to call you. And I said, oh, yeah, I've already seen myself on stage with the orchestra. I have already seen myself with them. And sure enough, I got that phone call the day before my birthday. And my wish was, oh, God, please let Count Basie call me tomorrow. Tomorrow came. I went, got in the car to go do my gig in Santa Fe, New Mexico. My roommate said, there's some old man on the phone. So I thought it was my grandfather calling. And so I said, hello. And he said, is this the little girl that wants to work with me? This is Mr. Basie. And I said, Otis? And he said, who is Otis? No, this is Count Basie. So I said, Otis, I've been waiting for Count Basie to call me on the phone. How can you play on the phone like that? I hung up the phone. So I went back out to the car. My roommate said, that old man is on the phone again. So I came back inside. I said, hello. He said, listen here. If you hang up on me again, I'm going to call another little girl. Now, do you want to work with me or not? I said, well, hi, Mr. Basie. I said, I waited so long for you to call me. I wasn't sure if it was you. Thank you so much for calling me. How much does it pay? And he said, what do you care? I said, I don't care. My dad makes me ask if I have a babysitting job or if I have a gig. And then that silence came again. But he changed my life. He changed my life. He gave me wings. I won a Grammy with the Count Basie Orchestra. It took 7 times, but that's all right. I want to instill in the vocalists that I work with and the students that I meet with in the Great American Songbook course that I teach to close your eyes. Close your eyes and see yourself everywhere you want to be. You can have it all. You can have it. I'm here as a witness to that, and I just want to say thank you to the Board of Trustees, but I really want to say thank you. I'm going to cry. Do people ever cry up here? I just have to say thank you to Professor Whitaker and his lovely wife, Cookie, and Dean Forger. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. Yes, I've taught at other universities, but this is a different experience here. And I quit twice the first week, I must tell you, because I was so terrified, you know? It's a big deal, man. It's a big deal being here, and it's a huge responsibility that I take very, very seriously. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I have pictures. There I am. There we go. There we go. There's the MSU babies on the bottom there. It's so wonderful. And that's me and Louis Armstrong, 1964. My mother was his vocalist, and my dad brought us to the gig, and I have on my Easter clothes. Okay, thank you so much.
I think all we can do is say wow.
Yeah.
And can you join us for every Board of Trustees meeting, please? That was incredible. Thank you. Thank you. That was incredible. I think Johnny Carson would be proud. with that, we're going to move on in the agenda, and I'm going to now invite Interim Provost Yaitsko to present this meeting's personnel actions. Provost Yaitsko.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the December 2024 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments. Keiko Mayadera, DVM, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences, with tenure, effective November 1, 2024. Andrea Johnson, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences and Pathobiology and Diagnostic Investigation, with tenure, effective January 1, 2025. Allison Kuipers, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Medicine, with tenure, effective December 30th, 2024. Janine Sulak Johnson, PhD, Professor and Meadowbrook Chair, Department of Large Animal Clinical Sciences, with tenure effective May 1, 2025. I present for approval the following promotion and tenure appointments. The following actions include tenure recommendations which were delayed last spring, recommended by the department chairpersons or school directors, the deans, and the provost in accordance with tenure rules. The following promotions include the award of tenure and are recommended to be effective January 1, 2024. Firas Kashani, promotion to associate professor with tenure, Department of Computational Mathematics, Science, and Engineering. Allison Kornalnik, promotion to associate professor with tenure, Department of Community Sustainability. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. Thank you.
Is there a motion to approve these personnel actions?
So moved.
Support. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Personnel actions are approved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now move to committee reports, and I'll ask Trustee Sandy Pierce to present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Extension Farm Stress Project Fund.
Your support?
I'd also like to note that Lisa Frace, our CFO, is available for discussion if anyone has any questions. If not, we can call for a vote.
Any questions? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the motion passes.
Thank you. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby establish a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Spartan Marching Band FFE.
Is there support?
Okay, and I would also like to note that Lisa Frace is available for discussion or to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to purchase approximately 92 acres of land located in Allendon Township, Michigan, only 3 miles from here, to support the Dairy Cattle Teaching and Research Center upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or the president's designee. Okay, and I'd like to note that Dan Bowman is also available for any discussion or questions.
Questions? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the following actions related to Spartan Stadium. Number one, authorizations to plan and proceed for the replacement of the video boards. Number two, an authorization to proceed for the West Tower renovations. That's the 4th, 7th, and 8th floors. Number three, an authorization to plan for the future modernization of Spartan Stadium.
Support.
Support.
Okay, now I'd actually like to have Alan Heller to provide additional context and address any questions you may have. This is a big project for us.
Thank you. Good morning, President Guskowitz and trustees. Spartan Stadium opened in 1923, and for over 100 years, the Spartan community have been gathering there and making memories, lifetime memories. And so the project will be in three phases. The first phase will be video boards. The video boards were constructed and put up in 2012. They're past their life cycle. And so the new video boards will offer new sponsorship opportunities and improve the game day experience for our fans. The second part of this project will be the West Side revitalization, which will include the 4th, 7th, and 8th floor. The suites will be updated. The restrooms will be updated, new technology, new flooring, new seating, a new opportunity for our donor engagement, revenue generation, and the opportunity to enjoy the Spartan football experience, to a greater value. And then the third part of this project will be the reimagination of Spartan Stadium, which I'm very excited about. A new East Tower, new bowl seating, new ADA improvements, new safety and security, and then the opportunity to partner with the academic and research community to make the Spartan Stadium a living facility every day and operate every day. And so as a former player, I joined thousands of former players, the Spartan community, to thanking President Guskowitz and the trustees for hopefully approving this project.
Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
Thank you. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the full restatement of Board of Trustees 607 investment policy in whole as Board of Trustees 607 investment policy statement as indicated in Attachment A. Be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees approves the rescission of BOT 106 Investment Advisory Subcommittee, because the new one is part of what we're approving. Be it finally resolved that the Board of Trustees establishes the endowment spending rate at 4.8% starting fiscal year 2026.
Support.
We recognize the importance of addressing concerns brought to the board regarding the university's investments. At the February meeting of this year, the Committee on Budget and Finance did initiate a review of MSU's investment portfolio and as promised over the summer, we updated the policy that is now in front of the board for review and approval. Our focus in these revisions has been clear, that MSU's investments support our fiduciary responsibility to financial sustainability, institutional growth, and advancing the university's core mission, education, research, and outreach. As a result, we have enhanced the governance mechanisms in the investment policy, including a revitalized investment advisory committee to provide advice, feedback, and review of the university's investment practices. This committee will have 5 to 9 external members with appropriate credentials in institutional investing or related corporate financial backgrounds. It will include the chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, or such other trustee as appointed by the chair to serve as an ex officio member, the president, the chief investment officer, and the chief financial officer will also serve as ex officio members. We also are making a commitment to form within this next year a university committee of faculty, students, and staff appointed by the president to consider investment change requests for non-financial reasons. Upon establishment of the committee, the board will establish specific and objective instructions as to how to evaluate the merits of the requests. The revisions to the policy build on prior commitments to inclusive dialogue with diverse groups of people. The future committee will hear concerns regarding specific investments and will draw on best practices from peer institutions and uphold high-level evaluation standards to support MSU's long-term financial health. We remain steadfast in safeguarding the resources necessary to advance our university's mission and to ensure opportunities for current as well as our future generations.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
I would just like to make a few more comments. The committee received a presentation on sustainability, the construction and facilities update, the fiscal year 25 first quarter operating forecast, and the annual debt update. The Budget and Finance Committee has had a busy and productive year. I'd like to share a few highlights from this past year. We approved over $810 million of capital investment in 24. Four examples of projects approved this year that are under construction demonstrate our support of our strategic focus. The new research building in Detroit, a $335 million project that was approved in April, will provide research space for the MSU and Henry Ford Health Partnership, where research will focus on areas including cancer, neuroscience, immunology, and infectious diseases, with a particular interest in health inequities and disparities and social determinants of health. The Plant and Environmental Sciences Building, a $200 million project that will open in March of 27, substantially increases MSU's research capabilities for research at the interface of plants and the environment, and provides new opportunities for integrated plant sciences research that is central to addressing challenges in agricultural and natural settings. The Dairy Cattle Teaching and Research Center, a $75 million facility, is under construction, and it's expected to open in the fall of next year. This project is supported by $30 million in State of Michigan funding and supports the expansion of research, education, and outreach that will serve Michigan's farmers and develop tomorrow's workforce. Renovation of space in Wilson Hall was approved for planning to support the new tech engineering degree program, an innovative program bringing together engineering and technology curricula to prepare students for modern engineering challenges in the multidisciplinary, interconnected world that we're in today. The program responds to State of Michigan workforce development goals, industry, and student demands. In June, the board approved a $3.65 billion budget with new funding supporting the strategic plan, including investment in student success, including funding for advising support and financial aid, faculty and staff compensation and benefits, and new faculty hiring, and research, including our partnership with Henry Ford and support for the new plant sciences building. I'd like to end my report with a few thank yous. I want to thank our Chief Financial Officer, Lisa Frace, who is here today, and her team, as well as Phil Zecker, our Chief Investment Officer, and his team, for the incredible amount of work and commitment that they put into everything that I've just talked about. I'd also like to thank and give credit to the Committee of Budget and Finance, our Chair, Dan Kelly, our Vice Chair, Kelly Tebe. Thank you for offering to lend your skill and your experience to help us navigate a $3 billion budget. Much appreciated. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Pearson. I just want to echo appreciation for everyone involved here and thank this board for a lot of good work that's being done in this space. If we're going to continue to be a leading global public research university, we have to modernize our facilities. I know oftentimes people become frustrated with the cranes that are up in the construction fences and navigating around all of that, but those cranes and construction fences are a sign of progress, and so we just have to be patient. And but I really appreciate the commitment by this board to allow us to continue to modernize facilities, build new facilities, and recruit the world-class faculty that we have. So with that, we will turn to Trustee Renee Konacki-Jefferson for the committee report on academic affairs.
Thank you, and good morning. On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I first move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the rescission of BOT 801 Development Programs Centralized.
Second.
Support.
All those, is there a discussion?
Secretary Fletcher is available if there are any questions.
Questions? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Next, on behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the amendments to the bylaws for academic governance bylaws included as Attachment A.
Support.
And again, Secretary Fletcher is available if we have any questions.
Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
And next, on behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move the Board of Trustees hereby approves the changes to Article 2 of the Board of Trustees bylaws, as indicated in Attachment A.
Support.
And for this, Chairperson Kelly will be providing some additional information and context about these changes.
Thank you, Trustee Konacki-Jefferson. A couple of comments with regard to the AA3 revisions. The resolution sets the minimum number of meetings for the board to 5, allowing for flexibility to repurpose the formal board meetings in September to host a stakeholder engagement forum. The emphasis here is on better engagement with the board with a diverse group of stakeholders that make up the MSU community. Under the proposal, the board will hold 2 formal meetings in each of the fall and spring semesters and 1 meeting in the summer, allowing for the formal university business to be considered and discussed. The board has asked the president and board secretary to develop recommendations for alternate engagement methods for discussion at our next board meeting. We will take feedback from stakeholders in forming new and better means to amplify voices and create meaningful opportunities to exchange ideas, thoughts, and concerns for the betterment of the university. Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Oh, so it's sure.
Right. And I want to
get out of order here, but so thanks. So I'm going to be opposed to this. I like the idea. I think it's great to have trustees more involved in the community, although that's going to be anathema to some folks. I kind of want to learn more about this before I support it. I have serious concerns with removing an opportunity for public comments. I do support public comments, and that's a concern I have. So until I know more about it, I'm voting no. Thank you.
I am also voting no. First, I want to commend you, President Guskowitz. You have an inviting, welcoming, transparent presidency, and I know that even our public comment has changed and shifted since you've taken this role. So I appreciate you and your consistency, and I do think that leadership matters. And so while I always would like for the board to come together and agree on every decision, I recognize that we sometimes diverge in our values, and that's actually good. You said it before you became the president, that diversity actually makes everyone stronger. And so for some of the same reasons that Trustee Dennell stated, and one other reason that I stated yesterday, which I believe that two of the trustees who are voting will not be here next year. So I would like to wait to vote for this for our two new trustees so that they can have an opportunity to shape our agenda for the upcoming year. So I will vote no as well.
Any further discussion?
I'll suggest a roll call vote on this. Trustee Byram, Trustee Dano.
No.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Yes.
Trustee Kelly.
Yes.
Trustee Pierce.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Tebe.
Yes.
Trustee Vassa. The vote is 6-2. The motion passes.
Our committee also received a presentation on the 60 by 30 grant and updates about the HLC Higher Learning Commission site visit and unionization. I want to also just take a moment to speak about the work that the committee has done over the past year and to thank my colleagues for their service on it. So the committee worked on many items, including continued focus on the board's key governing documents. This includes further work on the board's bylaws, creating a dual reporting structure for the board secretary, and the action we took today. A comprehensive cleanup of the 50 ordinances at the institution that affect a range of areas related to conduct on university lands, and action on 9 policies, again, including those considered today. These policies affect key areas of university operations and governance, including advancement, sponsorship and advertising, and research. And that work will continue as we move forward into 2025. Additionally, the committee has supported the university's efforts with respect to the recent HLC visit and considered several key strategic issues with the administration, including the MSU Henry Ford Health Partnership and enrollment. And this concludes my report.
Thank you. We'll move to Trustee Brianna Scott for the committee report on audit, risk, and compliance.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approves the following: a sponsored research agreement with Proton Bio, Inc., and a sponsored research agreement with IASO Therapeutics, Inc.
Your support.
Doug Gage is here if there is anyone that would like to hear from him or if there's any discussion.
Any questions, concerns? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Additionally, the committee received the annual Cleary presentation and an update on campus safety. The committee has discussed and acted on several fronts this year to promote a cultural compliance, safety stewardship, and continuous improvement, strengthening the board's conflict of interest policy to offer further guidance to board members, and a better conflict management and disclosure process. The committee considered revisions to the auditor rotation policy, an important process underpinning the performance of the annual financial audit. Relatedly, the ART committee continued to perform one of its key fiduciary responsibilities surrounding the audited financial statements, meeting with our external auditors and the CFO to ensure the fiscal health and integrity of the institution continues to be fundamentally sound. Our thanks to the staff of the Office of Finance, the Office of General Counsel, the Office of Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance, the Office of Research and Innovation, the Department of Police and Public Safety, the Office of the Chief Information Officer, and the Office of Audit, Risk, and Compliance for their continued efforts and for their engagement with the committee on a variety of topics this year. We look forward to a more productive discussion as we go into 2025. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. And we'll turn to Trustee Kelly Tebe for the committee report on student life and culture.
Thank you. Excuse me. The Student Life and Culture Committee received presentations on high-impact learning. We learned about what makes an experience high-impact and how to increase engagement. Students Donovan Hollins and Sydney Logsdon joined us to discuss their experiences. A presentation of MSU eSports was included as part of high-impact learning. Dr. Mark Largent, Vice Provost and Dean of Undergraduate Education, is here to introduce the eSports presentation for today.
Good morning. Thank you, Trustee Tebe. On behalf of Provost Yitzko and Senior Vice President Gore, it's my privilege to introduce some of our community members today around the topic of the eSports program. As we often say, going to college is so much more than just going to class. That classes and majors and earning credits are at the heart of what we do, but the undergraduate experience consists of learning both inside and outside of the classroom 24 hours a day and year-round. So the curricular and the co-curricular and the extracurricular opportunities allow our students to develop their passions and to discover their purpose in life. And they leave here as graduates career ready because of the combination of curricular, co-curricular, and extracurricular. So one really brilliant example of that is our eSports program. And just as Professor Rodney Whitaker thanked Dean Forger for his leadership and vision that enabled their work, I want to identify the tremendous work and support that Dean Heidi Hennick-Kaminsky has provided for the eSports program, which, while it is housed and supported in the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences, it is in fact open to all students at the university. And that kind of integration outside of the classroom and across majors is, I think, precisely what makes this work so good. So let me introduce, please, community members Chris Bilski and Anna Racine, who are going to talk about the eSports program for us. Thank you.
Good morning. First, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. This is a huge honor to get to share what we're doing with our program and the different ways that we're impacting our students and our community through eSports. When we look at programs across the country, when we started eSports here at Michigan State, we knew we wanted to take a holistic approach to eSports. We looked at it and we wanted it to be more than just gaming. And so we founded our program on what we call our four-pillar vision for eSports. Our first pillar is campus and the opportunity for any student, regardless of their experience or skill level, to come and engage and interact and connect through eSports. We have a mantra that goes, you need only to bring yourself when it comes to eSports. And through our facilities, through our campus events, we're able to have students come in, meet other students, and engage with the communities that eSports helps to create. Our second pillar is club. We currently have 16 different registered student organizations that are currently connected with eSports and gaming, which comprise of about 1,500 registered members and over 5,000 different active members engaging on a daily basis in their different communities. We're here to support them, advise them, mentor them, provide them the resources they need to continue to build upon the great work that those students have done, and to continue to provide those leadership opportunities that RSOs and student initiatives can provide. Our third pillar is competitive. For us, we are the best program in the Big Ten currently when it comes to competitive eSports. We built this from the ground up over the past 2 years. We've traveled across the country representing the university at different events such as the Super Bowl and the NFL Draft, and we want to continue to carry that legacy and continue to build on the reputation that Michigan State has in that competitive venture. And lastly, what really separates us, and it's underlined and highlighted by our connection with the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences, is that when we look at eSports, We want to take the passion that students have for gaming and esports and use that as a hook to connect them with a career that's going to serve them for the rest of their lives, right? We want to use our 4 years or 6 years as part of our esports program and give them something that's going to serve them for the next 40 years. And so through our program, we've really been able to take students who come to me all the time and they say, Coach Bilski, I want to work in esports. I want to work in gaming. And I'm like, yes, I love that. But what specifically do you want to do? Because there are hundreds of different careers that can be connected to esports. And so as many students as we have that are engaging in our competitive programs, we actually have more students that are impacted and connected with the professional side of what we've been doing with our esports. And you can see just a few of the different things that we're doing, production, social media, being in front of the camera, being behind the camera. We're getting students involved every day and giving them opportunities to build their resumes, develop their portfolios. So when they leave here, when they graduate from Michigan State University, they're better for being part of our esports program. I want to just talk a little bit about some of the impact that we've had on students. There is a study that was done by the Video Games and Esports Foundation that found that up to 82% of students who participate in esports and gaming clubs participate in no other extracurriculars. And to me, that's a really powerful statistic because it says that if we're not supporting esports programs here at Michigan State University, we're not only failing to provide those ways to connect with Michigan State, but we're also failing to provide ways for them to connect with each other, which is a really powerful and important part of esports, the ability to form community around things that you're passionate about. We have over 5,000 active members, as I said. We project over 10,000 visits to our esports facilities this year. And if you look at kind of the ecosystem and the nature of where esports is going, it is the fastest growing high school sport in the nation. The Michigan High School Esports League, who just 2 weeks ago actually hosted their state championships here at Michigan State University, which was the largest state championship that had been held yet. Last year, they had a 92% growth in the number of schools and teams participating. There's over 200 schools here in Michigan alone that are currently participating in high school esports, and we just see that continuing to grow and grow. And not only that, but when we're doing these events and we're using our esports programs, we're attracting some of the best and brightest to Michigan State University. Our two recruiting classes that we've had since we started our program, both of them have had an average GPA of over 4.0 when they've entered Michigan State, and almost half of them have actually come from out of state, including many international students who have joined esports here at Michigan State as well. One of those students who I want to highlight, who's been a phenomenal part of our esports program on the professional side of what we've been doing, that career connections, that opportunity to build and develop those resumes, is Anna Racine. Anna has been the president of one of our student gaming clubs here. She was actually the host for the largest collegiate Michigan tournament that's ever been held. And so I want to invite her up to talk a little bit more about her experience and what esports has provided her.
Hello, my name is Anna Racine. I am currently in my third year at MSU, and I'm graduating this year, so year early. I am the president and founder of the MSU R6 Club, and when I got to MSU, this whole program didn't exist. It was really just the clubs, and even then, the game that I really wanted to play wasn't a club yet. I was really lucky to find four friends who were interested in playing as well. And we created a kind of unofficial club team to compete together. And those were my first four friends at MSU. And so I was able to find a really close friendship there. And I wanted to build that into what became this year the official RSO that is MSU Rainbow Six Siege. We were able to turn five people into a flourishing community, and I am just in love with our group. We get to meet once a week and we compete. It's just really perfect. And to be able to meet in person takes an online community, and it gives you that in-person social contact. Further, the leadership opportunities in gaming is a lot more than what people expect. All of the clubs have elected e-boards, and the ECA itself has an overarching e-board, so students have the opportunity to become leaders as well. And in terms of the career, I didn't really give Coach Bilski any option to not hire me when I heard that he was hiring student staff. I pretty much showed up at Coach Eaton's office twice a week asking about the job, and I even slid my resume under Coach Bilski's door because I really wanted the job. And since then, it has been probably my favorite thing here. I get to work in digital storytelling, doing photography, videography, editing, voiceovers, hosting. It's really fun. And after that, I was able to talk to Coach Eaton, kind of saying, hey, I really want to do this post-grad. I want to be an esports host. And he said, okay, let's work with this. Let's make this something that we can get you experience for in college so that when I am graduated, I have that on my resume to find work where I want to be working. And I like to joke that I came to college a little too early to really take advantage of the program, but to be able to kind of see it be built from ground up has been one of the most fulfilling experiences here at MSU.
Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. I will just say that I witnessed firsthand on my listening and learning tour how competitive these students are. And so, Coach, you've got them playing really well. I didn't stand a chance when I was sat down behind that computer screen to play. Congrats.
Thank you so much. The committee discussed areas throughout the year that affect the student experience at the university. A selection of these include student wellness. The committee reviewed student engagement with recreation, sports, and wellness, including the usage of intramural facilities, having returned to pre-COVID numbers with 2,000 participants in 94 fitness classes and 5,895 participants in IM sports. The new Student Recreation and Wellness Center is currently on budget with the opening scheduled to be spring 2026. As you heard at the last board meeting, the committee also discussed the state of student mental health, recent enhancement to mental health services, and the need for additional resources. I had the opportunity to meet with the president and student leaders at the beginning of fall semester, and the same practice will continue at the beginning of spring semester. Additionally, we look forward to working with Student Affairs to host another engagement opportunity with student leaders in the spring, as we did earlier this year, to learn about their issues, priorities, and suggestions. We met with student athletes, support services staff, and student athletes. As a reminder, currently we have 630 students and 128 majors spread across 12 colleges, with 39 in the honors colleges, and the cumulative GPA is 3.3. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Tebe. I'll now turn to Board Chair Dan Kelly to present the motion for the confirmation of the 2025 Board of Trustees Chair and Vice Chair.
Thank you. In alignment with Article 4 of the Board of Trustees bylaws, the positions of chair and vice chair of the board are now automatically selected based on seniority. A confirmatory vote of the board is required. Therefore, I move that Trustee Kelly Tebe be confirmed to the role of chair and Trustee Brianna Scott be confirmed to the role of vice chair with terms commencing January 1st, 2025 and ending on December 31st, 2025.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Trustee Denno.
Thanks. So I'm going to vote against this because our bylaws say this should have been done by November 1st. And so I don't think we can pick and choose what bylaws we follow and don't follow. So that's why I'm voting no on this.
I, too. You just looked right at me like you're next. So.
No, I was looking down the line. Is there any other discussion?
I was next, so you were right. So the same reason, right, I do believe that in voting no, I'm holding us accountable, right? This is a governing body that must be adhering to our own self-crafted bylaws, particularly since discussions and actions around ethics and compliance have been a central focus for this board. It's critical that we are exemplars of integrity and keeping our own word. Our bylaws are living documents, as Vice Chair Kelly said yesterday. And so the bylaws for this particular action should be reviewed and revised for next year. I voted no initially for these leadership changes. I think this is not good governance anyway, so I'm just keeping with that. But also, I want to note that this is not a disparagement or a reflection of how I believe Vice Chair Tebe will lead. Of course, I'll be supportive of you and anyone who occupies that seat in all the ways that I'm allowed and all the ways that you need. So this has no disparagement or a reflection of what I believe you're going to do in that seat.
Any further discussion?
And just to Trustee sort of Denno's comment, just to clarify,
December 1.
Yeah, the December 1 deadline. You know,
I moved the sort of this was chosen as sort of the closest public meeting to that December 1 deadline. You know, I will work with the board in terms of making sure that December 1 deadline is hit next year. And I apologize for not hitting that December 1 deadline. So
you shouldn't apologize. We'll just rewrite it.
Yeah. And it is something that we really should take a look at just timeline wise. So anyway, enough from me.
Any further?
Are we able? Is this appropriate?
I have a question.
Okay.
No, if the answer is is your question around amending the...
No, it's Stefan.
Not on the floor without a prior discussion.
Oh, I think, okay. All right, thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the motion passes, and the board chair and vice chair for 2025 are confirmed. Congratulations, Trustee Tebe and Trustee Scott, and I look forward to continuing to work with you in this coming year. I think we'll turn to Trustee Dan Kelly.
All right, thank you. Now we will move on to the liaison reports, and we will start with the student liaison reports.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. The Residence Halls Association has had a very successful fall semester with a focus placed on programming, funding, and campus connections. This semester, we were able to organize, fund, and throw a total of 18 events in a little over 3 months. These events focused on reproductive health promotion, professional development, philanthropy, and community. RHA also engaged in many partnerships across campus to help promote health and safety. This included Fresh Check Day, which focused on mental health resources, the It's On Us campaign, which combats campus sexual assault, the Inclusive Campus Initiative, Student Activism Summit, and many others. We also supported on-campus students through sponsorships this semester, providing $30,000 to registered campus organizations through our Committee on Budget, and over $32,500 to groups through sponsorships from members of our leadership team. This funding helped provide opportunities for cultural events, conferences, and other supplies and resources groups may have needed this semester. We have seen these efforts increase our engagement, helping us to have the highest number of active hall governments and caucuses since pre-COVID, which we are very excited about. This year, every single one of our neighborhoods officially has an active Black caucus and queer caucus. RHA has been working alongside the Black Students Alliance to help better support our Black caucuses as well. We also took delegations this semester to the Regional Residence Halls Association Conference in Wisconsin and the National Student Leadership Diversity Conference in Chicago to learn how to better support our constituents. All in all, we have had a very busy semester working to improve the on-campus living experience and expect the spring semester to hold even more work. Significant projects coming up for the Residence Halls Association are continuing to edit our constitution to give CORS and COPS groups easier access to RHA funding, creating systems to make year-to-year transitions easier for our campus groups, and aligning our policies with university policies. Our team members are also already planning events like the spring concert, the MLK Community Unity Dinner, and fundraising opportunities for registered student organizations. We hope to carry our momentum over to the spring semester and continue to help and represent on-campus students. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning. ASMSU's last meeting of the semester was last Thursday, where our representatives passed several pieces of legislation. Some that I would like to highlight include Bill 6142, which advocates for a memorial inside the newly constructed multicultural center recognizing Chicano leaders. Bill 6144, which advocates for a circular economy institute at Michigan State, which would help improve our sustainability, reduce waste, and extend the lifestyle of our products. Bill 6145 and 6146 focus on advocating for the disaggregation of data related to ethnicity, race, gender identity, and sexual orientation. Bill 6147 advocates for a $15 minimum wage for ULA positions so students are able to make a livable wage while attending Michigan State. Bill 6148 advocates for the implementation of an Early Start program across all colleges at Michigan State. Early Start programs have been shown to significantly help first-generation and marginalized students get more accustomed to college, so we hope to get this started soon. Lastly, Bill 6151, which is to advocate for the retention of the Ducks campaign and University Health and Wellbeing. The introducer of this bill has shown immense sorrow that the Ducks campaign is going away. So we have been in talks with UHW about this already and how we can further advertise their new AOD campaign. ASBCU is currently preparing for ABTS Big Ten on the Hill conference in Washington, D.C. During this conference, we and other student governments across the Big Ten get to advocate to our specific legislators for topics that affect students from across the country. This year, we'll be focused on advocating for the legalization of interstate licensures for mental health professionals, allowing for institutions who accept federal funding to accept Medicaid and TRICARE, and for reconfigurations to the CLEAR Act. I and several other members of the ASBCU Office of the President had the opportunity to have a tour of the Center for Survivors yesterday. During this tour, we learned much about the services the center provides, procedures for cases of RVSM, and about the resources they have for students. It was an extremely informative tour, and I highly encourage everyone to reach out to the center to learn more about them and how you can help the center. I also want to briefly thank Tana Fidowa and Alexis Travis for helping organize this tour. One thing I want to put on the radar right now that you might eventually hear about is MSU Safe Place. According to their website, MSU Safe Place is a program of the Center for Survivors that provides emergency shelter and accompanying support for survivors of intimate partner violence and stalking. The Safe Place shelter is open to students, faculty, staff, and the community of Ingham County. They also provide advocacy, shelter, counseling, support groups, safety planning, information, and referrals to survivors of relationship violence and stalking, and all support services are free and confidential. I bring up MSU Safe Place because they will be changing locations soon, and part of the process will call for them to ask for funding to relocate from the board. From the director of the Center for Survivors, we were asked to advocate for the approval of this, which is why I'm saying all of this now. The shelter helps several survivors of RVSM and domestic violence, and it is one of, if not the only shelter like this in a higher education institution. So when this does come up to the board, I'm imploring that you please vote in favor of the shelter and for the several survivors that it will help. This also won't be the last you'll be hearing about this from ASMSU, as we already have plans to pass legislation for this. Lastly, I find it important to, again, highlight two pieces of previously passed ASMSU legislation that you will soon hear about more during public comment. Firstly, ASMSU supports and calls for the Board of Trustees to review their investments and divest from weapons manufacturers and other entities complicit in genocide per 6065. Further, ASMSU supports the students, faculty, and staff of the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities and their calls for independence as a standalone college at Michigan State. While a committee has been formed to investigate this, ASMSU calls for administrators to ensure there is proper student, faculty, and staff involvement with this discussion. For the final time this year, this concludes my report. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope to see positive change for our students.
Thank you. We will now turn to the faculty liaison report.
Great, thank you. Good morning. It is hard to believe that we are already at the end of this semester. I wish the many students who are graduating and their families and friends the very best as they celebrate today, and I wish our many faculty and staff a terrific semester break. Today, I want to acknowledge the many faculty who are engaged in university leadership on our many committees and task force who are so key to making a difference for our students and our faculty. Today, actually, we have with us Liz Gardner, who is chair on our University Committee on Academic Governance, Bree Holtz, who is vice chair of the University Committee on Faculty Affairs, and, of course, Justin St. Charles, who is one of our ALMs. Yesterday, our faculty leaders had a good meeting with the Board of Trustees. While I will not rehash our entire discussion, overall, we discussed board processes and policy changes that have impacts upon the university, including the investment policy, the Higher Learning Commission visit, as well as other faculty and concerns and interests, one point I will highlight shortly. On Wednesday, several faculty leaders met with incoming trustees Mike Balow and Rebecca Behar Cook as part of the Board of Trustees onboarding process. I thank the Board of Trustees, Stephen Fletcher, Victoria Nelson, and many others who have worked to put together this training. With our incoming trustees, we had a productive discussion touching on topics including conflicts, transparency, interactions with faculty through the board liaisons, the importance of oversight, and ensuring that the leadership management of the university are in the hands of the president, ensuring that they are on board with the president's one-team approach. Other Board of Trustees members made a written commitment to work with the president, and I hope that our new trustees will also make this important agreement with the president. Last week, the steering committee approved the formation of a working committee to consider gaps at MSU in terms of routes available for faculty regarding conflict management.
While this may sound daunting, at present there are limited places for a faculty member to turn if they encounter a complaint or have a concern. For some issues, there have been limited, if any, opportunities, even for informative consultation. Most of the other Big Ten universities do have conflict management or ombuds office for faculty, and we want to consider the need for greater support in this space and aim to have a report sometime next year about gaps and potential routes to address gaps that may be most effective for our faculty and for MSU. Recently, I have mentioned efforts that we have had towards ensuring that we have greater support of the scholarship, the research and creative activity of faculty, particularly those in areas that are traditionally not supported by other means such as federal funding. We discussed this at our meeting with the Board of Trustees yesterday, advocating for support through our capital campaign. While there are many critical needs, many of the college development teams focus on scholarships, which are incredibly important, and if there is a focus on faculty, it is upon endowed professorships, which are also very important. But a bigger question is how to campaign for general funds to support, in essence, the smaller but important needs and interests that support faculty scholarship. Placing this under the umbrella of a single initiative yesterday, Trustee Jefferson, maybe jokingly, but I thought it was a great idea, mentioned the term faculty everywhere in response to our request and playing on the name of an impactful, though different, project that President Guskowitz began at the University of North Carolina. This could be very effective. While we are now at a semester break, and many will be celebrating a time of relaxation, I do want to mention that there are some mounting concerns that are on the hearts and minds of many of our faculty. With each significant change in leadership at the federal level, there are periods of concern by faculty on many fronts. One that is always of concern is the prioritization in terms of federal funding. Two administrations ago, those of us in the senior executive service of the federal government who were leaders in federal funding agencies were given substantial initial cuts. Thankfully, these were not the cuts that were supported by the U.S. legislature, but they were ones that we were living with for nearly 2 months. A 30% cut in the NSF budget, a 30% cut in the EPA budget, a 20% cut to the Department of Energy budget, and an 18% cut to the NIH budget. With mounting discussions about reductions in the federal budgets, I can tell you that this is a time of concern for many faculty. When I started my career, one NSF grant would cover funding to support one postdoctoral fellow and two graduate students, and sometimes also one or two undergraduate students for them to get engaged in research. Now such a grant, which is offered at the same size 2 decades later, now covers the cost of just barely a student, with an expectation of the same or greater accomplishments. In light of the many years of relatively flat budgets with some elevation, but often targeted for specific programs by the agencies. Faculty with projects such as those from the Department of Education, such as Barbara Snyder's project that you heard about earlier this fall, a $10 million project having a huge impact on K-12 STEM students across the nation, and those with EPA and other environmentally focused projects have very substantial concerns. In the Wall Street Journal last Friday, there was an article about how NIH dollars may be linked to academic freedom using a mechanism such as the College Free Speech Rankings. MSU has a slightly below average ranking, ranking number 175, impacted by what was termed a deplatforming incident, and all it takes is one. Though MSU has made very significant strides with our Academic Freedom Committee work, as well as providing voice to faculty and students, as well as the community. In recent visits to Washington, D.C., and from examples, and maybe I should say anti-examples, like at the University of Michigan and in multiple spaces across the country, we are seeing increased pushes against using the phrase diversity, equity, and inclusion, even encouragement from using this language in the broader impact section of NSF proposals, as well as a shift, what we're seeing at the University of Michigan, against diversity, equity, inclusion. This is of tremendous concern, as we do have so much more work to do, and this is very core to our university mission. With all of these issues, while all of these issues are of concern, we will certainly learn more in the coming year. through legislative understanding and through community voice, highlighting the impact of our research and how our research impacts the community and industry are incredibly important. How diversity, equity, and inclusion are also so important for the future workforce. These are also issues that we need to really emphasize. The Board of Trustees have very powerful voice and network, and I just wanted to raise these issues of concern to you. And in closing, I want to thank Diane Byram for all of her work on the Board of Trustees and as the faculty liaison. She has engaged incredibly well with the faculty leadership, keeping us very well informed, and we appreciate that. I also thank Dan Kelly for his leadership of the board, and I wish both Trustee Byram and Trustee Kelly very well and encourage their continued engagement with MSU. I wish all of you a wonderful semester break, a wonderful December, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All right, at this point, it's the chairperson's comments, and we have a resolution recognizing the service of Diane Byram. So let me read the resolution. Diane Byram has served as the Michigan State University trustee since 2008, including as board chair from 2017 to 2021. As chair, she helped guide the university through significant changes and pivotal moments with steadfast leadership. And throughout her tenure, she has consistently demonstrated a profound commitment to the MSU mission and its community of students, faculty, and staff, embodying the highest standards of leadership, integrity, and dedication. Trustee Byram has been an advocate for construction projects that have transformed the MSU campus. These include the Faculty for Rare Isotope Beams, the Bott Nursing School, the STEM undergraduate building, the plant environmental sciences building renovations, the dairy cattle teaching and research facility, medical mile developments in Grand Rapids, the Henry Ford Partnership, the Multicultural Center, and the Student Health and Wellness Center. Each of these projects reflect her unwavering dedication to improving the academic, research, and student experience at MSU. In addition to serving as board chair, Trustee Byram co-chaired the presidential search that led to the appointment of President Sam Stanley Jr. She also served as board liaison to the Faculty Senate, helping ensuring open communication and collaboration between the board and MSU's faculty. She spearheaded the revitalization of MSU infrastructure planning and facilities, and strengthen ties with the Michigan Building and Construction Trades Council through breakfast events. Trustee Byram's service on the board has built on the distinguished career in public service and communications, including serving as the Ingham County Commissioner, a member of the Michigan House of Representatives, a state senator, and the Michigan House Democratic leader, the first woman to lead a caucus in the Michigan legislature. As a proud MSU alum, Trustee Byram has exemplified the values of a Spartan, including serving as co-director of the Michigan Political Leadership Program at MSU, an initiative that trains emerging public policy leaders for the challenges of tomorrow. Trustee Byram's service and influence has been recognized by Crain's Detroit Business, which named her one of Michigan's top 100 most influential women in 2021. The MSU Board of Trustees expresses its gratitude and sincere appreciation to Diane Byram for her years of dedicated service, her indelible contributions to MSU, and her ongoing commitment to excellence in public service and advocacy. With that said, just a couple of personal comments about Diane. First of all, I want to thank you for your service. And really, to sum it up, I don't know if she's going to like this or not, but some of you may not know, she's one tough cookie. So, thanks.
Thank you. So we're going to take.
I'm sorry. Yeah. At this point, yeah.
And I lift weights, so I can handle it.
Congrats. Thank you.
Would any other trustees like to make remarks, comments regarding Trustee Byram and her service?
I would like to. I am not going to get emotional or cry because I think Rima took the box down here at that end. But Diane, I have to tell you, I recall I did like Mike Balo, came to a few meetings before I was a trustee just to get a sense of how the board operated. And I just recall how tough that time was when Trustee Tebe and I were actually running. And then to come on this board, it has been under fire probably from the time we got on the board. I don't feel that there's ever been a sense of calm. And you led us for the 4 years that I was on the board as the chair with integrity and character. We didn't always agree on things, but you never took things personally when we didn't, and I appreciate that. I agree with Dan, as he stated, you are a tough cookie because you dealt with a lot, personal attacks, and you still remain steadfast in what you thought was in the best interest of the university with every decision that you made. And I appreciate, to me, a testament of a person's character is how they treat people when they're going through things, right? And you always maintained a level of respect with everyone, and you treated everyone the way that you would want to be treated. And I appreciate your leadership. I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate the wisdom that you have brought to this board. I think it's a little scary. I was saying this to Trustee Tebe and Trustee Kanaki Jefferson, that we are now going to be the most senior people on this board. That's a little scary. Because there is that historical knowledge that you have been able to bring. And so often when we've had questions, you have been able to go back in your mind to kind of tell us why things are the way that they are, or to provide context with a lot of issues. And so we are going to miss that on this board. And I do not take that lightly. I appreciate, as Kevin has stated a couple times, that people have agreed to stay on speed dial. And I want to thank you for that. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for having shown me that you have to have Teflon skin to be on this board, but, you know, to keep on ticking regardless. I also want to thank you for the cookies. I'm not going to let you get away from the fact that you thought giving us store-bought candy canes was enough. Whatever, Diane. Normally she brings us homemade cookies, and she did not do that this year for our Christmas tree. So I'm looking forward to something in the mail soon. And I have appreciated getting to know your husband as well over these years. So just thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your steadfast leadership. Thank you for always putting MSU and what is in the best interest of this university first. Thank you.
We shouldn't have had you go first, Brianna. I'm a little bit more like Dan, a little short-winded. But I just want to thank you, Diane. I know, you know, we didn't always agree on everything, and I think we even got off to a little bit of a rocky start when I got on the board, but I always knew that everything that you did was because of you, your love for MSU, and that was never in doubt, no matter what you did, even if we didn't agree on it. So I just thank you for your continued leadership.
Okay. Well, I just want to say, as I've already did earlier, your institutional knowledge, institutional memory is so valuable to all of us. I definitely will, and you've said I can keep you on speed dial, but we expecting calls. But I just appreciate your commitment to being strategic, bold, and always student focused. And I think that's who you are, and that's what we appreciate most about you. So thank you. And with that, we'll turn to Trustee Byram, because she now will read a resolution.
Clarification so that I know exactly what I'm doing here. I want to make some comments about the resolution in my service. It's really been a personal honor to be a trustee on this board for the last 16 years. Michigan State University gave me a tremendous opportunity as an undergraduate, and I was this young gal from a very first in my family to attend college. So as a first generation college graduate from a small rural community. And the opportunities that have been afforded me because of my Michigan State University education, I value tremendously. And that's been the core of my service on the board. It was to give back so that others could have similar opportunities afforded to them that I was able to have because of Michigan State. As I am winding down my service, frequently the question is asked, well, what are you going to miss most? And that answers the people that I've worked with. And it starts with the students, curious, bright, fantastic students, and the future is whatever you see yourself and what you want to do. And that's very exciting to me. It's the world-class faculty. Thank you for your comments today during your comments as well as yesterday. And it's been my privilege to be able to work with the faculty, represent the board as your faculty liaison. And I have a deep respect for shared governance, and so I appreciate that relationship. It's also our academic staff and support staff. I so admire all that you do and the relationships that I have been able to forge with your representative unions. I don't take that lightly, and I very much appreciate those friendships. And then I have to recognize the top-notch administrative staff, whether it's the board office, it's the executive vice presidents, it's the vice presidents, it's the deans. I have so enjoyed working with all of you, and I'm not going to name names today because I'd forget someone, but you know who you are. I've tried to personally say thank you to each and every one of you, give you a hug, and just let you know how much I've appreciated the working relationship that we have had over the years. I want to congratulate the two newly elected board members that will be coming on in January, Rebecca Bahar-Cook, as well as Mike Ballow. And I think Mike may be in the room today. I had a chance to talk to you last night as well as Rebecca. And President Guskowitz, I wish you a long, successful tenure at Michigan State University. This university needs your stability more than anything else, your vision, your energy, your engagement. And so I know with you as the president and this one team approach that this university is going to soar. So I wish you the absolute best. And the gavel's now passed to Trustee T-Bay and the Vice Chair, Trustee Scott. And I'm glad you recognize you are the institutional memory now on the board. So treat it gently, kindly. And with that, I'm just going to say that to everyone, thank you for the opportunity to be a trustee at this wonderful university. I believe the future is strong and bright at Michigan State. Go Green.
Trustee Byram, that would bring us to your report as well as another resolution of appreciation.
Yes, and before I do my part and read Dan's resolution, I want to first do some faculty honorifics. That's part of what I do at every board meeting in my comments, because I think it's really important that we elevate our world-class faculty and we brag about them a little bit. So I'm pleased to share recent accomplishments within our Michigan State University community that exemplify our commitment to excellence in education, research, and service. I'd love to share the honorifics with the public because it's a testament as to how great our talented faculty and staff are here at Michigan State. The distinguished faculty members in the College of Nursing, it's Dawn Goldstein, Kathleen Poindexter, and Courtney Sullivan, have been conducted as fellows into the American Academy of Nursing. The prestigious honor reflects their exceptional contributions to nursing education and their dedication to advancing health care practices. The Department of Accounting and Information Services has been recognized with the Excellence in Accounting award by the Michigan Association of Certified Public Accountants. The accolade celebrates the department's successful effort in achieving STEM recognition for the Master of Science in the Accounting program, positioning it along with among a select group of programs nationwide that integrate advanced technology and data analytics in the accounting curriculum. So now it's my pleasure to read Dan Kelly's resolution. I'm getting my act together, Dan. But you know, whatever, right, Dan?
Yeah, whatever. I hope the print's large.
That's a private joke between Dan and I. It's his favorite word. Kathleen, I don't know if it's his favorite word at home, but it's his favorite word with me. So this is a resolution of appreciation for Trustee Dan Kelly, Michigan State University Board of Trustees, December 13, 2024. Dan Kelly has served on the Michigan State University Board of Trustees since January 1, 2017, contributing his legal and governance expertise to supporting the university's leadership in the MSU community. Chair Kelly, president and founder of the Kelly Firm PLC in Auburn Hills, Michigan, has practiced law for over 28 years, focusing on governmental, municipal, and labor law. He has provided counsel to municipalities, school districts, corporate clients throughout Michigan, and is often invited to speak on risk management and governmental immunity. With his wealth of experience, Chair Kelly has supported the MSU community in its mission, including advocating for a strong academic environment for current and future Spartans. His Spartan legacy also is reflected in that all four of his children who have graduated from MSU. Chair Kelly served as MSU's representative on the MSU Henry Ford Health Steering Committee, two presidential search committees, and the steering committee that supported the last presidential transition. Chair Kelly officially welcomed President Kevin Guskowitz during the investiture celebration, underscoring his dedication to fostering a smooth leadership transition and championing MSU's future. Chair Kelly also served as the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee Chair and was Vice Chair of the Board, leading efforts to improve the university's governance and accountability efforts. Throughout his tenure, he collaborated closely with board members and the president to better position the university for continued growth and stability. Chair Kelly's service extended beyond MSU, as demonstrated by his previous roles at Oakland Community College Board of Trustees, where he held leadership positions as both a trustee and board chair, and his 2 4-year terms on the Independence Township Board of Trustees. His work has exemplified a commitment to community development, public service, and responsible governance. The MSU Board of Trustees expresses its profound thanks to Dan Kelly on his dedicated service, thoughtful leadership, and steadfast commitment to the advancement of Michigan State University. So, Dan, on a personal note for me, too, I have so enjoyed serving with you as a colleague on the board. And we've been through we've seen just about everything in the last 8 years working together. And as I said last night, I hope our paths cross. I consider you and Kathleen and your family friends. And so this is not going to be the end of our time together, our relationship. It'll just change. So congratulations.
Yeah, right.
We invite the whole board in for a photograph.
Would anyone like to offer any other comments or remarks?
I'm going before Brianna.
Okay.
I'm second.
Right, let's go. Dan, I always appreciated you willing to pick up the phone and call, and I also just want to thank your family, three of which are here, for sort of always including me as part of the Kelly clan. I appreciate that so much, and also welcoming my family into the group as well, and they really enjoyed getting to know you all, and I'm sure we'll see each other soon. So, it's not goodbye.
DK. That's my nickname for him.
3 minute time.
Yeah. So Dan warned me about what I could and could not say last night. Number one, let me tell you all, this guy makes the best Bloody Marys in Michigan. All right. So Dan Kelly, when I think on him, number one, I think we're the longest serving vice chair in the history of the board, perhaps. But more than that, I think what's important for me to say is that Dan is our lone Republican on this board, and you would not know it, not to say that he's not a tried and true Republican, but he never approached things from a political lens at all, which is something that I've appreciated. Perhaps it was survival for you on this board with a whole bunch of Dems, but you just exemplify what I believe it means to be a servant leader. And one of the things that I greatly appreciate about you, Dan, is that you served with humility. You never walked around as if you were any better than anyone. You always treated people the same. I never have felt that you approached anything in a self-serving fashion as you've served on this board. You've always served, again, like Diane, in what is in your perceived best interest of the university, and I appreciate that. I do appreciate as well, Dan, that, and this is something that we're going to miss, you do have a level of legal expertise through your municipal legal work that is going to be greatly missed on this board, the lens that you're able to bring to a lot of our conversations. I think you are an exemplary ARC chair. Without your leadership, I can't imagine. You know, it's been a lot. And so I thank you for that leadership. I thank you for the words of advice that you have given, the friendship that we have developed. I hope that it continues past your time here on the board. I thank your family and especially your wife for sharing you with this university. I am going to miss our Thursday nights so much. I hope that maybe you just surprise us one day and come back on a Thursday night. I just appreciate your friendship. I appreciate your leadership. I wish you the best. I don't come to a lot of games. So if you need tickets, hit me up. But anyway, thank you so much. I think that we are in a better place because of your leadership here on the board. You were the right person at the right time for this position. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
I'm not going to say too much. I just want to thank you for the cigars and the drinks, particularly my Coca-Cola with a splash of lemon. I know it set you back, but you were always willing to come, sit down, smoke a stick, and allow me my Coca-Cola. I appreciate you. We'll see you.
Okay, and I just want to, again, say how much I appreciate your steady hand in leading the board over these past 9 or 10 months and your balanced approach to helping us work through some difficult issues, and I really appreciate that. And I, too, will expect that you'll allow me to keep you on speed dial, but I know that if you don't pick up, you're going to be out on the golf course because you'll have a little more time. So thank you so much. With that, I'll turn it over to Secretary Fletcher.
Jack Kelly, do you have any remarks?
Okay, I will have a couple of brief remarks. Should just say ditto to everything that Diane said. But first of all, I want to congratulate the two new trustees. I think the MSU board is going to be well served by both Mike and Rebecca. I want to thank my wife and my kids, two of whom are here today. Yes, thank you. As anybody who has sat on a board knows, the spouses are a big part of it, and now they're going to start crying. I want to thank the board, this board and all of the prior boards. I made a lot of good friends. I hope to see you all soon and keep that friendship up. I want to thank the students, the faculty, the administration. I hope that we primarily, because of the new president, who I fully support, I hope that both Diane and I have left the university in a better position. It's been an interesting 8 years. There's no doubt about that. I was honored to serve this university. This is we're stewards of our responsibility, and I'm more than happy to pass that responsibility on to the new trustees. The one thing, little known fact, and I like pointing this out to people, I never missed a meeting, and I never missed a vote. So I showed up. All right, thank you, and happy holidays.
He almost missed a meeting.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Kelly. That will take us to Vice Chair Tebay, I believe.
I'll be brief today. I just wanted to take a moment to express my heartfelt condolences to the family, friends, and colleagues of Professor Emeritus Curtis Stokes. He was my professor when I was a freshman at MSU and James Madison in my MC 201. Professor Stokes dedicated 36 years of his career to James Madison College and Michigan State University and was a pillar of scholarship, teaching excellence, and leadership in the field of PTCD. And for those that are not in James Madison, that's political theory and constitutional democracy. His impact on students and his colleagues and the entire Spartan community will continue to be felt at MSU and beyond, and he will be deeply missed. For those that are in James Madison, everyone knows that that first year is a really challenging year and a nerve-wracking year, and he was my first professor that sort of gave me that confidence and made me realize that I was in the right place and that I belonged at James Madison. And so I think I just want to send my condolences to his family and appreciate that everything that he did for me my freshman year. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tebay. Trustee Denner.
Thanks. So I just, I'll be brief. I want to thank Kevin Guskowitz for his leadership. Really enjoy working with you, bouncing ideas off you, agreeing to disagree with you. I want to thank all of our first responders, especially everyone in law enforcement for all you do for our community. I want to give a shout out to a really good friend who died unexpectedly last week. A great Spartan, a really proud Spartan, my friend Carl Kristoff. He graduated from Michigan State in 1966 with a bachelor's degree in hotel and restaurant management. He was so proud of that degree. He met his wife, Rose, here at Michigan State University. She's also a very, very good friend. Carl loved MSU athletics. There wasn't a game he missed. If he could be there, he would be there. So if we have a decline in ticket sales, we can we know why. Carl was he just loved life. He was young at heart. And he was a great father. He was a great dad to his two daughters who both went to Michigan State. Great grandfather, and he was a really good friend and super supportive. And Carl, you're going to be missed. And he was just so proud of being a Spartan. So thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Denno. Trustee Pierce.
I'll just, I've spoken enough really today, but I just want to congratulate Diane Byram and Dan Kelby. It's been a pleasure to work with you. I'm going to miss you. And congratulations, Kelly Tebay and Brianna Scott, as you're taking on leadership roles. And to you, Mike, welcome to the board. And to everyone here, happy holidays.
Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I wanted to join in just expressing my condolences to the family of Dr. Cliff Wharton. I did have the privilege of meeting his son, Bruce Wharton, at the portrait unveiling of Dolores Wharton. I believe it was probably a year and a half ago or so. The legacy that he has left is just a remarkable legacy. We have benefited so much because of his leadership. And so I wanted to just make certain that they understand how much his legacy has meant to me personally. Part of our research foundation meeting, we talked about how much of his vision is the reason why our research foundation is where it is today. And so thank you to his family for sharing him with us, and we will certainly miss his leadership. I also wanted to talk a little bit about my aspirations of being a cowgirl when I finally retire from being an attorney. And those aspirations lead me every year to the Farm Bureau annual meeting, where I get the opportunity to be around Michigan's farmers, and I just enjoy it. My mom knows that this is my dream. And I just wanted to talk about it because when we go to Farm Bureau every year, and my mom typically is my plus one that will attend with me, they play that MSU fight song. They have Sparty come. They turn that room green, and there will be like 600 farmers with their cowboy hats on. And the relationship between MSU and our agricultural community here in Michigan is so alive and strong. So I wanted to acknowledge MSU's College of Agriculture and Natural Resources for establishing the transformative gift agreement that they have with the Michigan Farm Bureau family of companies. In recognition of this generous gift, the MSU Pavilion for Agriculture and Livestock Education will be renamed the Farm Bureau Pavilion at Michigan State. This partnership is yet another testament to how MSU continues to make meaningful impact in serving the MSU community, supporting Michigan's agricultural heritage, and benefiting the broader public. So go green with that. I also wanted to just congratulate our fall graduates. We have many of them. I am unable to make the graduation, but I do believe we're going to be represented by Vice Chair Tebe. Congratulating them, we are proud of all of the work that you all are doing, and we look forward to the positive impacts that you all will continue to make in your respective fields. Thank you. Oh, and happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you very much, Trustee Scott. Trustee Vassa.
It remains my honor and privilege to serve on this board. I am yet holding on. I'm especially thankful to those who have been supportive and loving in tumultuous times for me personally and professionally. I won't name the folks in this room and on the board, but I will name one who's not here, who is the best Spartan ever, and that is Lucius, my husband, who has held me up, been 10 toes down, and takes care of our family when I'm away. I just want to share a few diversity milestones we celebrate this year. We still have a lot of work and concerns ahead that we need to address, but I wanted to share a couple of highlights from this year. One, this fall, MSU achieved a record enrollment of 52,089 students, with 27.8% of those students being students of color. That is the most diverse class on record. And I owe that to our leadership, right? People come when they see that they're valued and that they're respected, and they come when they feel that they will have a place to belong, a place to be heard, and a place to thrive. And we are seeing that leadership in President Guskowitz, and I appreciate you. Earlier this year, Dr. Jabbar Bennett presented to us on the 2023-24 DEI report, highlighting that out of 222 action items, 88 are in progress, 52 are under evaluation, and 22 have been fully implemented. More work needs to be done, but there is a movement in the right direction. I extend my gratitude to each member of the MSU community for your contributions toward these accomplishments. As leaders at Michigan State University, we have a profound responsibility to uphold the principles of equity, inclusion, fairness, justice, and access that define the heart of higher education. Today, I must express my deep concern regarding the University of Michigan's decision to abandon diversity statements in their hiring practices. While I respect the autonomy of our peer institutions, I firmly believe that MSU must chart a different course, one that actively embraces and strengthens our commitment as a land-grant institution to the state of Michigan. The data tells us a story we cannot ignore. Black student enrollment at MSU has declined in recent years, and while there have been strides in graduation rates and time-to-degree metrics, significant gaps remain between black students and their peers. These disparities are not just numbers. They represent real students who face real systemic barriers that hinder their academic success and sense of belonging. Higher probation rates, longer times to degree, and greater financial burdens when they leave disproportionately impact Black students, perpetuating cycles of generational inequity. The stats are even more abysmal for our Indigenous students. Abandoning DEI efforts would not only risk eroding the progress we have made, but would also signal to our students, our faculty, our staff, and administrators of color that their experiences and contributions are devalued. MSU must take bold, deliberate action to ensure that every student feels supported, seen, and empowered to thrive. This means not only maintaining but expanding initiatives that address inequities in access, retention, and academic success. Diversity is not just a buzzword. Representation does matter. It is a measurable driver of innovation, excellence, and institutional strength. By investing in policies and practices that uplift historically non-represented groups, we ensure a more just and vibrant future for all our Spartans. MSU has an opportunity to lead where others may falter, are failing. We have an opportunity to shine. Proving our commitment to equity is not conditional, but foundational. We cannot follow a path that retreats from responsibility. Let us instead reaffirm our dedication to creating an MSU where every student succeeds. Together, we can honor the values of this institution and ensure that MSU not only represents the diversity, resilience, and brilliance of Michigan, but also globally. I'll end my remarks the same way I always do at this time of year. Hope for the future and an imperative. In strong, students, staff, administrators, faculty, we made it. It's been quite a year, full of exciting moments, bus rides, new leadership, conflict, celebrations, and coalition. As we go into this new year, let's take on the charge of songstress Carmen Bradford, who brought me to tears with her song. I think she's already gone. Let's envision the MSU community we want to be. Conflict grows us. As we move into the new year, let's embrace coalescence, coalition, community, and to make difficult but critical cultural changes so that we can keep increasing our celebrations. I just want to just pat myself back on the alliteration of it all. I don't know if y'all saw those C's. Okay. I'm an English teacher. In strong and rest. Relaxing, rejuvenating rest. Deep rest will allow us to reframe, reimagine, and recommit ourselves to the bright green future ahead of us. Go green.
Right.
Thank you, Trustee Bassa. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Thank you. I have just four quick comments. I want to begin by joining Trustee Tibe and expressing my condolences to Professor Curtis Stokes' family. I had the opportunity to meet him about 5 years ago, and that's because my husband, Wallace Jefferson, was a student in James Madison when he and a group of other African-American students decided it was time to have a faculty member who reflected them. And he was part of a committee that hired Curtis Stokes, and they did a reunion for him a number of years ago. So I did not realize that you had him as your professor, but you and Wallace will have to talk about that and exchange some memories. I want to also join my colleagues in thanking both Dan Kelly and Diane Byram for their service. I can't imagine a board without the two of you on it, because you were both on it when I joined. And while over the years of our work together, we may not have always agreed on everything, I have greatly appreciated your openness, your willingness to answer my questions, your conversations, I think, always brought whatever decision we came to a better place. And I will miss both of you very much. I gave you each a small token of my gratitude, a book yesterday, and I just wish you both well as you write your next chapter. And I hope that that next chapter still includes lots of threads of Michigan State in it. So thank you both for the opportunity to learn from you and lead with you. And I echo what everyone has said. I hope that you will not be strangers and that you will still be with us regularly. I want to also echo the heartfelt welcome to our newly elected trustees, Rebecca Bahar Cook and Mike Balow. I am looking forward to you being on this side of the podium coming in January. So welcome and congratulations to you. And I look forward to serving with you in the coming years. And then I think I had one last point, and that is to congratulate and really thank Trustees Tebe and Scott, who will now be Chair Tebe, and Vice Chair Scott for stepping into this role of service. So thank you both.
Thank you very much, Trustee Konecki Jefferson. President, if you'd indulge me, that moves us on to the public participation on items not germane to the agenda. Again, each individual who signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. You'll hear the buzzer at the 30-second mark, and again when your time has concluded. Given the number of speakers, we ask you do not exceed your allotted time, and note that, again, that persons scheduled to speak may not cede all or part of their time to other individuals or read statements on their on behalf of others. We'll now hear from Danny Vincent, followed by Dennis Straley. Danny, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you all for your time this morning. My name is Danny Vincent, and I'm a fourth-year student graduating tomorrow with a Bachelor of Science degree in Environmental Studies and Sustainability. I'm a passionate, hardworking, and driven individual who has held multiple roles here at MSU, such as an MSU tour guide, an MSU tour supervisor, and an undergraduate researcher in forestry, and I've worked for over 2 years as a Student Life and Engagement Sustainability Assistant and ECOREP Fellowship Coordinator. Ooh, mouthful. I was born and raised a Spartan fan, and I'm a first-generation student who had no idea the opportunities that Michigan State would offer for me. But I'm sincerely forever grateful to be where I am today, a proud soon-to-be Spartan alum. I chose MSU to get my steps in. I chose MSU because of the nature surrounding this beautiful campus. I chose MSU for the innovation and incredible recycling initiatives. I chose MSU to get a degree in sustainability through the Department of Community Sustainability, and I look forward to making sustainability outreach and education a major part of my life's work. For those of you who may not know, sustainability means preserving and conserving natural resources to ensure that they remain available for future generations. But sustainability goes far beyond environmentalism. It's interconnected with every discipline, every career path, and every aspect of life. Here at MSU, we have the Surplus Store and Recycling Center, the Student Organic Farm, solar carports, mass timber, and so much more. These are just a few of the sustainable resources that we have available to our community. Did you know that MSU is ranked in the top 25 globally for sustainability by the Times Higher Education? And yet, this achievement is challenged by our ever-changing university goals. And without making sustainability a priority, we risk losing this ranking. It is our job to create an adaptable and innovative campus community for future Spartans to enjoy. In my role as a student at ECOREP coordinator, I've had the absolute pleasure of working with incredible student ECOREPs who may not share the same majors or minors, but who share the common passion for sustainability needed to address the eco-anxiety expressed by many students, including myself. I come to you today, trustees and President Guskowitz, to ask you, what are your goals for supporting students in sustainability? I come to you with concern that my peers, current and future Spartans, may be without the same opportunities and experiences that I have had. With that being said, how can we implement an introductory sustainability course for all Spartans, no matter what their academic path is, so that they can be prepared to address sustainability challenges in their future careers? How do you see MSU sustainability evolving in our Spartan community? I love our campus. I am proud to be a Spartan, and I invite you to take a closer look at what it means to be Spartan Green.
Thank you very much, Danny. Our next speaker is Dennis Straley, followed by Missy Chola. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning. President Guskowitz and trustees, this is my third presentation to this group regarding Eagle Township. We are the small farming community of 2,700 people on the other side of Lansing. About 4 years ago, MSU and Lansing Economic Area Partnership, LEAP, joined forces to sell and develop about 1,500 acres of prime farmland that had been donated to MSU by the late David Morris. We residents have no qualms about the sale of the property. We agree that it was part of Dave's mission or his vision for the property to be sold. That is, if MSU was unable to use it as an agricultural research facility. However, we certainly do take issue with the property being sold as a mega manufacturing site. It would basically double our township's population each work day. We put up signs proclaiming no mega site. We talked with media. We talked with LEAP. We talked with you. We signed petitions to have a special election, and we recalled our township board supervisor. We created our own planning and zoning boards and ordinances. We talked to our county commissioners. We listened to hours and hours of citizen comments at our township board meetings. It worked. I am here to say thank you. Thank you for changing your plans of creating a monster in our township. It is reported that LEAP has removed your property in Eagle Township from their marketing efforts. We would like to think that MSU was behind this change of heart. President Guskowitz, in your presidential investiture ceremony, you not only mentioned the pressure you faced in naming the presidential MSU dairy store ice cream flavor, Gustachio, but you also noted several times the importance of agriculture and farmers to MSU. We Eagle Township residents also believe in good ice cream, agriculture, and farmers. Thank you for supporting our township, residents, and farmers with your change of heart. Please know that you are always welcome to visit Eagle Township, maybe on a bus tour, and are welcome to discuss future plans for your property at any of our township board meetings. Again, thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Missy Chola, followed by Taylor Jones. Good morning, Missy.
Okay. To be a Negro in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be enraged almost all the time. James Baldwin said this. This semester has been incredibly challenging for so many of us who are trying to make this university a place where we can feel safe, valued, and heard. At the start of the semester, we entered with hope. We knew it would be tough. We knew it would be difficult, but we hoped that this time things would be different. We hope that this semester, especially with the added tension of an election season, would bring a renewed commitment to our safety and well-being as students of color, as marginalized communities, as individuals who continue to feel the weight of systemic oppression. But what has been so disheartening is the consistent pushback we've faced despite the efforts we've made. We have worked tirelessly this semester to engage. My bad, my iPad just started. Okay. We have worked tirelessly this semester to engage in multiple meetings. All we asked for, all we wanted, was a simple statement, a statement from the Board of Trustees and from President Guskowitz condemning the harassment, discrimination, and violence we faced. But that statement never came. Let me add in that it is quite crazy or hilarious, to be honest, I actually can't find the word, that the Committee on Student Life and Culture has taken time to meet with students this semester, but I don't recall you ever meeting with BSA. So I want to take time to say thank you to Trustee Denno and Trustee Vassar for reaching out to BSA personally when we were going through a hard time. And I would have expected to hear this from the people who are put in those positions to hear from students, student life. So, yeah. So what we learned from these meetings is that it has become abundantly clear that our voices are very much ignored. And to make it clear, we will not be silenced. We will not accept the status quo. My co-political affairs director, Taylor Jones, will go into more detail about the specifics of our campaign, but I wanted to start by explaining why we are here today. We are here because we cannot just keep waiting for change to happen on its own. We are here because we're hoping that people in these positions of power will one day listen to us. This campaign, Hate Has a Home Here, is not just about every student. It's about every student who has ever felt unsafe, unheard, or unsupported. It is about every student who has ever walked into a meeting, sat down at a table, and felt that their voice was the only one that wasn't being listened to. It's about every student who has ever been told that their concerns are valid, but nothing's ever done about it. It's about every student who has been forced to fight for their right to exist in the space that is supposed to protect them. We are here because we all collectively deserve better from this institution. You have disappointed me beyond words today. I'm pretty sure you can tell as I'm quite frazzled as I'm giving this address. I am very confused by what I have heard today. And so, you have never cared about your students. You never cared about our input, and you absolutely never will. So I don't even know if I'm going to come up here next year, because honestly, what is the point of talking to a bunch of people who are not going to listen to us anyways?
Thank you. Missy, our next speaker is Taylor Jones, followed by Taba Bitts. Taylor, good morning.
Good morning. As my co-chair, Missy, has spoken to the frustration and disappointment that has defined this campus for so many of us, today I build on her words and demand the accountability and action we deserve. Let us begin with a definition, an ultimatum. An ultimatum is a final demand, the rejection of which results in retaliation or breakdown in relations. Today represents such an ultimatum. We, the Black Student Alliance at Michigan State University, are no longer asking. We are demanding real, immediate, and measurable change. For too long, this university administration, including President Gushowitz and Board of Trustees, has shown no urgency in addressing the safety and well-being of Black students. Despite paying the same tuition, our voices are silenced and our experiences are dismissed or seen as performative, but nothing can be performative about this. These are real experiences. Let me share some numbers with you since MSU loves data. In 2024, Michigan State University enrolled 3,400 Black students. The average cost of in-state tuition over 4 years is about $124,000. That means Black students represents over $415 million in tuition revenue for this institution. Now imagine how much that revenue would decline if Black students and their family really understood the hostile environment they would face here. Imagine if they knew about the hate symbols on dorm rooms, the racial slurs hollered at students as they attend courses that they paid to go here, and the administration's lack of meaningful action to address this. Yes, scholarships and grants may reduce that number, but the message remains the same. Black students are an important part of this university, and yet our concerns are ignored, our safety compromised, and our contributions are undervalued, but sounds about right. This speech centers on the Hate Has a Home Here campaign. This is our response to ongoing hatred, retaliation, and racial discrimination on this campus. This hate is real, it's documented, and it's experienced every single day. This university should be a place of growth, learning, and community. And honestly, that is why we pay tuition, right? To go to a four-year university at a PWI, you would think that you would gain something. We do feel unsafe, we feel unheard, and we feel unseen. It becomes our duty to amplify our voices and demand the change we deserve. We approach the university leadership with good hopes, good faith, find solutions, although it's evident we're not in the conversation, we're not in the decisions, and we're not even in the room. Obviously, because decisions are being made and we're hearing about it today. In response, we acted. This campaign ensures our voices are no longer disregarded and our demands are accountability for the harm that continues to foster on this campus. Today, we demand transparency in investigating hate crimes, safety measures for Black students, and accountability from leadership. This institution has the opportunity to lead and show what it means to stand against hate and discrimination. If the university fails to act, it will face consequences. Media exposure, protests, broken trust, and a growing divide between administration and the students it claims to support. Check our resume. You know what we are capable of. So this is your ultimatum, and I'll leave you with that.
Thank you, Taylor. Our next speaker is Tava Vitz, followed by Abigail Rodriguez. Tava, good morning.
Good morning. Michigan State University Board of Trustees and President, my name is Tava Vitz. I'm an MSU alum of both the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, ARCA, and the College of Arts and Letters. I graduated in 2014, and I work as a teaching artist, dancer, and nonprofit fundraiser in Lansing, Michigan. Originally, I requested to speak at this meeting because I had heard rumors that a proposal to merge ARCA with the College of Arts and Letters would be voted on today. The proposal seemed secretive, as I only found out about it by word of mouth, and in all honesty, it damaged my perception of my alma mater. As such, I feel grateful and relieved that the item did not make today's agenda. With that said, it is imperative that I take this time to speak on behalf of myself and the wider ARCA alumni community, also in solidarity with our students here at Michigan State University. So please let it be known that we ARCA alums stand united with ARCA faculty and staff in their letter written to the board on December 3rd. To quote said letter, "We are not advocating for a specific outcome at this time, but rather requesting a consultative process consistent with shared governance. We ask that the Board of Trustees only consider proposals that result from a robust process that engages with key stakeholders in each college," end quote. In conclusion, I understand that a working group of representatives from both colleges and the provost's office has been formed, but that it has not yet met, and I ask that the Board of Trustees only consider proposals that stem from an open, collaborative, transparent process conducted by said working group. With that, thank you so much for your consideration and time.
Thank you very much, Tava. Our next speaker is Abigail Rodriguez, followed by Amanda Flame. Abigail, are you with us? Hello and good morning.
Morning. All right. My name is Abigail Rodriguez, and I serve as the ASMSU representative for the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, or ARCA. Over the past few months, I have been very vocal about my concerns regarding the potential merger of ARCA with the College of Arts and Letters, Cal. Today, I am grateful that no formal proposals related to the merger were on the agenda. However, I am here to reiterate that this issue remains a deeply important one for me, my peers, and our community. While the absence of a proposal today is a relief, it is not the end of this conversation. The uncertainty surrounding ARCA's future has created anxiety for many students, faculty, staff, and alumni, and I believe it's important to keep this issue at the forefront until a definitive resolution has been reached. In light of recent conversations and statements made about ARCA, it's critical to address some misunderstandings and inaccuracies regarding our enrollment numbers especially. According to the state news article published on November 8th, ARCA was said to only have 46 incoming students this semester. However, as clarified by an Office of the Registrar report, that number only reflects first-time students and omits other incoming student categories. When these are included, ARCA has a total of 61 incoming students, with returning students brings a total to 139. These numbers show an upward trend in enrollment, yet they are misrepresented publicly, painting an incomplete and unfair picture of the college's vitality. That being said, ARCA is more than just a college. It is a model for interdisciplinary, community-engaged liberal arts education that supports students to think critically, engage deeply with communities, and grow into leaders who will create meaningful change, a space that deserves to be preserved and supported. I want to emphasize how crucial ARCA is not just for those of us who are part of it now, but for future Spartans who will need a space for their voices, their passions, and their potential. Personally, ARCA has been at the core of my academic journey. It is the reason why I have been able to achieve many of the opportunities and honors that I have, including my Marshall and Rhodes nomination I have had. And most importantly, ARCA has taught me how to turn knowledge into action, how to connect with people from all walks of life, and how to be a thoughtful leader who prioritizes community and justice. This community is not something that can be replicated or preserved in a larger, more traditional structure. That's why any proposal to consolidate ARCA into a larger college like Cal would be detrimental not only to its students, but to the spirit of innovation and engagement that ARCA embodies. Additionally, I want to amplify the perspective of ARCA's tenured faculty who recently penned an open letter addressing this issue. Faculty have emphasized that ARCA's unique and award-winning residential model fosters collaboration, community, and high placement rates, 99%, the highest among MSU's colleges. Additionally, calling for the newly formed working group to be allowed to explore all options. Finally, I just want to acknowledge and appreciate the hard work of Interim Dean Chambers during this time of uncertainty. I believe the best path forward for ARCA is to begin the search for a permanent dean. A permanent leader would provide stability, vision, and advocacy that ARCA needs to continue thriving and ensure ARCA's mission and values are upheld. I want to assure this board that I will continue to advocate fiercely for ARCA and against any attempts to diminish its impact. ARCA has shaped my academic and personal journey, and I know it has done the same for countless others. While we may not have any proposals on the table today, the fight for ARCA's future is far from over. I stand here not just for myself, but for the hundreds of students, faculty, staff, alumni, and stakeholders who believe that ARCA's legacy and mission are worth preserving. Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. Our next speaker is Amanda Flame, followed by Wasim El Reyes. Amanda, good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For 20 years, I've conducted research amidst conditions of ongoing civil conflict in a range of both neo-fascist and authoritarian socialist contexts. Several of my research partners abroad have been variously subjected to professional demotions, house arrests, and threats of disappearance for speaking out on issues related to their expertise. And so it is not lost on me that speaking openly in this way is a very precious right. Make no mistake about it, whether we are aligned or opposed in this room, we are all navigating an increasingly volatile context of populist authoritarianism here in the United States. This is a populist authoritarianism that has openly declared itself hostile to higher education. It is hostile to our core mission, the pursuit of truth. And what's more, it is a movement that is hostile to civic institutions conceived not as responsive to corporate shareholders, but to the changing needs of a diversifying public. In an era of resurgent authoritarianism, our collective voices and institutional weight matter more than ever. For this reason, I'm here today in regards to the university position on thoughtful restraint as it pertains to faltering academic freedom on our campus. First, the position on thoughtful restraint protects the rights of individual faculty to speak out on issues related to our expertise while actively discouraging deans and department chairs for doing so. Please understand that this position reduces our deans and academic units to bureaucrats rather than diplomats who are tasked with translating sophisticated research to a broad range of publics. Now more than ever, university leaders should be encouraged to distill not only what we know, but how vital our knowledge communities are to functioning democracy. Second, thoughtful restraint guarantees the rights of individual faculty, like myself, to make political statements, but it requires us to carefully distance ourselves from the institution when doing so. Please understand that this position will place those who have the most to lose in increasing isolation from our esteemed professional communities. Those who have the most to lose are nearly always faculty of color, women, queer, trans, first gen, and international faculty. And because our most diverse faculty are disproportionately untenured and on fixed-term contracts, the position on thoughtful restraint will most certainly contribute to growing faculty self-censorship on the most pressing issues of our time. Self-censorship is not just about speaking at podiums or in the classroom. It relates to the bold questions we seek to answer, our methods, our publications, and it forecloses the pursuit of knowledge. When I speak of safety, I wish I were only speaking about the safety of job security. But everyone at MSU would be empathetic to my concerns of safety in the literal sense as well. I am certain that I am only partially informed about the professional and physical threats made to Arab, Jewish, Black, Latinx, Asian, and Native American faculty and students on this campus, threats that certainly predated Hamas attacks on civilians in Israel, but which have certainly escalated alongside Israel's relentless genocidal campaign in Gaza, and threats that are expanding in the wake of this recent election. We are all facing existential crises today. The growing reality of authoritarianism here and around the world, as well as runaway climate change and the ongoing genocide, both of which our university continues to tacitly fund via our investment portfolio. More than ever, we need our leading institutions, few more so than our land-grant universities, to speak up and to provide the courageous moral and expert leadership our world so desperately needs right now. To quote from our own mission and values page in MSU's strategic plan, the challenges we face today, quote, require leadership from institutions on global reach, significant scope and scale, and preeminence in areas of global grand challenges to address the pressing issues of our time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Wasim El Reyes, followed by Susan Batinsky. Wasim, good morning.
Good morning. This is the fourth time that I, as a Palestinian American from Gaza, stand here to implore you, trustees of our university, to do what is only moral by divesting from genocide, to dissociate financially from corporations facilitating the mass destruction of a whole group of people. And yet, so far, no moral argument seems to carry weight against MSU's, quote, financial considerations such as expected return, risk, and adherence to applicable laws, unquote. By now, I hope you recognize that I cannot give up on you. I owe it to my murdered family members, who are among the clearly underestimated official count of 45,000 Gazans directly killed by Israel. I owe it to the 17,000 murdered Gazan children who are among those fortunate enough to be counted. I owe it to the over 106,000 wounded Gazans. I owe it to the 11,000 Gazans who are missing. I owe it to Gaza, a city with the bone-chilling distinction of having the most child amputees in modern history. 10 children lose one or both legs each day in Gaza. I owe it to the 90% of Gazans forcibly displaced from their homes by Israel. The Lancet Medical Journal reports a conservative estimate of 186,000 deaths in Gaza. Above all, I owe it to you as inescapably moral human beings who will never find moral absolution in, quote, fiduciary duty to the institution and to the generous donors who have entrusted their legacy to the university, unquote. What a legacy. I hope you know, you ought to know, that this is morally vacuous institutional language. As an individual, I cannot stop the mass slaughter of my people or heal the trauma and life-altering injuries. I cannot restore amputees' limbs or reunite tens of thousands of orphaned children and their murdered parents. What I can do is stand before you and bear witness to the truth. In his essay, My Dungeon Shook, James Baldwin instructed his nephew that, quote, we with love shall force our brothers to see themselves as they are, to cease fleeing from reality and begin to change it, unquote. May you see yourself as you are. May you confront reality. May you enact change. Divest now.
Thank you, Wasim. Our next speaker is Susan Batinsky, appearing via Zoom, and then we have Robert Maleka. So, Susan, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. I'm trying to get video working. Can you see me? I don't think you can.
No, there is no video, so it's just your remarks, Susan.
Oh, okay. Well, good morning, and let me start by saying that I think MSU is one of America's great universities, and that I love it here. Truth be told, being a law professor at MSU is my dream job, or it would be, if I also had a union. After years of struggling for one, I and my colleagues still don't have a union, specifically the UTSA. Why has this gone on for so long? There is a single, simple answer. Some MSU administrators have been engaged in virulent and toxic union-busting techniques. More so than the average bear, I know of what I speak. Before becoming a law professor, I was a union labor lawyer for 7 years. For the first 3 years of that period, I was assistant general counsel to the United Steelworkers of America. And then for another 4 years, I worked in a Manhattan labor law firm representing the Flight Attendants Union, the Airline Pilots Union, Teamster Locals, and assorted other labor organizations. I can tell you that MSU administration's tactics against UTSF are among the worst I have ever seen. Aside from impeding the union's progress, I believe this bellicose approach is tarnishing our university, including the Board of Trustees. Let me explain. The union-busting regime contradicts the board's neutrality resolution. That resolution, by the way, should be lauded as a highly sophisticated expression of civilized labor management relations. But as I said, administration has been running roughshod over it. One must ask, I think, how does this reflect on the other actors in this drama? I fear that to the outside world, this disregard may make both the union and the board appear ineffectual. As if this were not damaging enough, the administration's intransigence likely injures the university's reputation and even bottom line. A 2024 Gallup poll shows that 70% of Americans approve of having labor unions. This includes 91% of Democrats, 69% of independents, and 52% of Republicans. So how will people in Michigan and beyond feel about a university?
Oh, Susan, sorry, your 3 minutes has sort of expired. So we are going to have to move on to other public speakers, but thank you for your comments this morning. Our next speaker is Robert Malika, followed by Dick Sadler. Robert?
Thank you. My name is Rob Malechka, and since 1995, I have been a professor in the Department of Chemistry, where I served for 10 years as department chair. I am also a member of the Union of Tenure System Faculty. I support the union's drive for fairness, voice, and respect. I am confident that the Union of Tenure System Faculty will make MSU more efficient, make us more attentive to the needs of our students, and in short, make our university better. To the members of the board, we appreciate and respect your neutrality agreement. Despite that neutrality agreement, members of the administration have worked against our efforts to organize. As just one example, this spring I was invited by curious faculty from the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology to join them at the end of a BMB faculty meeting to discuss the prospect of a tenure system faculty union. The morning of that meeting, I received an email from BMB informing me that the provost had quashed the invited discussion. More broadly, the administration has repeatedly interfered with the tenure system faculty and librarians' protected right under the law to establish a union organization. The administration has actively dissuaded tenure system faculty and librarians from joining the union. The totality of these actions has demonstrated animus towards the union and a failure to bargain in good faith. This conduct is not only unacceptable, it is unlawful. As faculty, we demonstrate our accountability to our students and our university every day. As a union, we are committed to holding our administration to the same standard of accountability. As such, I am here to announce that the Union of Tenure System Faculty have directed our lawyers to file an unfair labor and practice complaint with the Michigan Employment Relations Commission. On behalf of my UTS colleagues, I thank you for the opportunity to speak, And Professor, Dr. Gustavus, if you are interested and curious to how this union will make us better, we are more than happy to meet with you at your convenience. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Malechka. Our next speaker is Dick Sadler. Dick, Dick's name inadvertently got left off the list that I have in front of me, but he signed up before the deadline. So, Dick, I think you're on Zoom, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Dick, thanks for your flexibility, and good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm an associate professor in the Department of Public Health at MSU's Medical School branch here in Flint, and also a member of the Union of Tenure System Faculty. I've been a faculty member for nearly 10 years now, and I've scarcely been more embarrassed by our university than I am today, for reasons that extend beyond my remarks, primarily regarding its inaction on divestment. But why I'm speaking today is this. I'm a Flint native who witnessed what happens when the strength of unions is eroded. Flint, the birthplace of General Motors and the United Auto Workers, a city whose economy was obliterated by GM as they sought to take away workers' abilities to control their own destinies, all to save money on labor costs. It's not lost on me the irony of being in a named department for GM's founder, C.S. Mott, who Andrew Highsmith and Ansley Erickson demonstrated was an anti-union segregationist whose interests favored his corporations foremost. I've likewise been bemused with the administration's disregard for the democratic process as tenure system faculty have sought to unionize, for the fact that our union reps came prepared to over a dozen meetings, even as the administration routinely sent representatives empty-handed and unprepared to move our conversations forward, for the fact that we spent over a year collecting cards from a clear majority of all faculty and are still waiting for a count of those cards. Functionally, what we are asking for is not groundbreaking. It should not be considered provocative or even unusual. The faculty are some of the brightest in the country. We are a major research institution, garnering hundreds of millions of dollars in grants. And somehow our administration believes us to be too immature and infantile to direct our own futures. They believe they will somehow lose if we are granted the union we've been working toward. But this is not a zero-sum game. Society benefits when workers have the right to organize. Unions benefit from stronger membership. And our union will add hundreds to MEA's roles, which will in turn strengthen our state's educational system at large. If we want our state to continue its comeback, if we want our young people to stop moving out of state, if we want MSU to be considered a beacon for working class rights and solidarity amidst a society that increasingly views universities as elitist, the Board of Trustees must direct the administration to recognize our union. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Mike Baylow, followed by Jesse Estrada White. Good afternoon, Trustee-elect Baylow.
Thank you, Dr. Fletcher. As shocking as it might be for some in this room to believe, I actually didn't plan on coming today, but yet here I am. Something about the streak, you know, keeping it going for 4 years plus the eight to come was intriguing to me. And then I thought, I won't say anything. I'll just be there. And I thought, well, there's a couple things. And there, you'll indulge me. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And as often is the case, you know, I kind of tailor my remarks to other themes. The first thing is the beginning. I want to tell you, as I've told many, and I want people to understand just how humbling it is to have the opportunity to serve on a board like this in an institution like this, particularly the way we do it, where, you know, someone like me who had never thought about ever doing that, and you have nearly 2.5 million people that filled in an oval next to your name, it's something that kind of brings you to your knees in terms of the trust that people place in you. So the term trustees is very appropriate. Once I was proud to serve my country as a younger man, and now I'm proud to serve my home state and this institution to bring my values to this board. I've had the good fortune in the last few days of getting to know Rebecca Bahar Cook, who I think is going to be a wonderful addition to this board. And I thank Dr. Fletcher and his organization for being very professional and getting us new trustees up to speed. And we have a lot of work to go. The middle part of my speech, a little bit of business. I just want to say that what we see, you know, going on 3 hours, of course, it's exhausting, but this is important work that we do here. I too have reservations about removing a meeting next year since we only have six of them. I think perhaps the better course of action would be to add the stakeholder engagement while keeping the six meetings that we have so that we make sure it works. Nevertheless, I've been heartened with the leadership the President Guskowitz and his team has provided the university. I'm more than willing to listen to the ideas so that we can end up with something that's as good and perhaps a lot better next year. Always needing to remember one thing, you know, simply put, like what would Wharton and Hannah think? Notice the great seal that's behind the president on the wall. I mean, I look at it, and those of you that can't see it, perhaps because it's not in the video, there's lines coming into the old building that are obviously light. One's left to ask, is the light coming in or is it going out? I would submit it's probably both. May the light always shine in on this place. And that logo is conspicuous not just by what's there, but what's not there. There's no wall in front of that building. The path leads to the front door where knowledge can be disseminated and people can exchange ideas. Our constitutional duty is sacred, and we must always engage our stakeholders. And in the end, I wish you all peace. Whatever your faith is, I wish you God's blessing this holiday season. I wish you to go home and hug your loved ones and give your friends grace and your enemies perhaps even more grace. Love one another, and when we get back here in 25, we'll get to good work. And I appreciate our outgoing trustees, and I'm heartened and humbled to be a trustee, and thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Our next speaker is Jesse Estrada White, followed by Valerie von Frank. Jesse, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Jesse Estrada White. I'm a member of the Hoaria Coalition and one of the five student protesters arrested in October after the last board meeting. At that meeting, we called on you to join us at our sit-in and discuss divestment with the students you are supposed to represent. It was both a protest and a community space. We came together to learn from each other, share food, and recommit to our struggle for divestment. We took the risk of occupying this building because we believe that an end to the genocide is necessary and that a more democratic and just university is possible. Instead of joining us and sharing this vision, you ran away and hid from your complicity in the genocide. And President Guskowitz, you personally ordered our arrests rather than agreeing to meet with us on our terms. You all preach civil discourse, but your actions have shown what you really mean. Whether it is lying about being at a vigil, sending K-9 units to a peaceful event, or arresting protesters, your actions do not align with your words. The disguise of civil discourse shapes what is acceptable speech and what is not. This then gets weaponized against those challenging MSU's role in funding genocide. It is used against us when we become too disruptive, too big to ignore, because this university never had any intention of listening to all of its students, just those that do not question your preconceived notions about the world. When you use civil discourse, what you are really saying is sit down, shut up, and know your place. We will not sit down or shut up, and we know our place. It is here in this boardroom demanding that you do better. The rhetoric of civil discourse is also meant to paint us as radicals, as uncivil. It is not radical, it is not uncivil to oppose genocide. It is not uncivil to oppose apartheid. And it is not radical to demand that this university end its role in aiding both genocide and apartheid against the Palestinians. By using your position of power to promote a rhetoric of civil discourse, you are trying to marginalize students in the university through a painting of them as abnormal outside the acceptable types of speech. Instead of promoting real discourse, it is limiting the types of discourse only to those that you deem acceptable. Now, with your moves to a guidance on institutional restraint, MSU is further entrenching itself in this regime of weaponized civility and in the process revealing your reliance on right-wing fascist policymakers. The roots of these policies lie in attempts to destroy civil rights and anti-war movements during the 60s and 70s. They are gaining popularity again as divestment becomes an impossible demand for our universities to ignore. But this guidance shows an infantile understanding of the university and its historical role in the state and world. How can we claim that universities should be neutral places for discussion when they take on active roles in reproducing systems of oppression? This university's role in the dispossession of native land and the development of weapons for the U.S. Army in Vietnam disprove that MSU can ever be a place of abstract, neutral production of knowledge. Rather than engage meaningfully with the stakeholders of this university, you all have chosen the coward's way out. While doing so, further marginalize students on campus. We again, as my fellow student David said earlier, call on you to join us at a town hall led by students this February 5th, where you can hear from the stakeholders of this university, from our fellow students, and the people demanding divestment and a better university. We call on you to meet with us on our terms, to discuss our demands, not in closed-door meetings in this boardroom or in any other room, but to hear openly from students, from faculty, from staff, from the community who make up this university and who want it to be better. And we call on you to find just a little bit of courage and end your complicity in genocide.
Thank you, Jesse. Our final speaker for this afternoon will be Valerie Von Frank. Valerie, are you with us? Okay. Then President Guskowitz, that concludes public comment for this morning, but I believe I will turn it over to Chair Kelly for one more important announcement.
Yes, thank you. So just as our last act before we adjourn, the board would like to recognize the Board of Trustee GPA Fall Award recipients, and I believe that all of their names will be listed on the screen. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. President Guskowitz, I think that concludes our formal business for this morning, or this afternoon.
President Shorehow, it's going to keep on scrolling. We want to, there we go, we're getting to the. Right, we're almost there. We're back to A. Okay, congratulations. Congratulations to all of these incredible students, again, alongside nearly 4,000 students that we will celebrate their many accomplishments at commencement ceremonies beginning this afternoon at 3:30. And then again, we have two ceremonies tomorrow. We hope to see many of you there. I, too, want to wish everyone a happy holiday season. And as was said by a number of folks, please try to find time to rest. And we'll be back at it in early 2025. So thank you for being here. And with that, I'll ask if there's a motion to adjourn the meeting. A second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right. The motion passes. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Well done.
Yeah. Great job.
I got it. Well done. And you won't have to sit there and listen to me. All right.